Approaching me, she said, I never seen a man who looks so all alone. Could you use a little company? If you pay the right price, your evening will be nice and you can go and send me on my way. I said, you're such a sweet young thing, why you do this to yourself? She looked at me and this is what she said. Oh, there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. I got bills to pay, I got mouth to feed. It ain't another ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good. Not even 15 minutes later, I'm still walking on the street when I saw the shadow of a man creep out of sight. And then he swept up from behind, he put a gun up to my head. He made it clear he wasn't looking for a fight. He said, give me all you got, I want your money, not your life. But you try to make a move, I won't think twice. I told him you could have my cash, but first you know I gotta ask, what made you wanna live this kind of life? He said there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. I got bills to pay, I got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know I can't slow down, I can't hold back. Oh, you know I wish I could. Oh no, there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good. Money from the church, he stuffed his bank account with righteous dollar bills. But even straight, I can't say much because I know we're all the same. Oh yes, we all seek out to satisfy the whole thrill. You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. Say you want a revolution. Well, you know the revolution starts now.
It cannot take quiet.
Yeah, the revolution starts now. You don't back up in your own hometown. What you do is me.
Welcome to WRAF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
And we're playing Where's Werby Tonight? Peter is gone for the second and final week. He'll be back next week, and I'm Jolene Jordan. Yeah, that's me. And I want to thank Peter for always trusting me enough to take over his show completely when he's gone. And also, while we're thanking people, I want to thank Nick for getting us, like, that was pretty darn good timing, Nick, getting us on time on the show. Jade for answering the phones tonight. She's in there waiting for your phone calls. 313-298-WRIF or 313-298-9743. The phone numbers. It is a phone-in talk show. And also, I have to thank Al, who does Midnight Metal, and which Jade is also a part of during the week here at WRIF. Al, thank you for helping me out with our phone system here tonight. You know, this equipment, it's the bells and the whistles, but sometimes there's little ways of having to get in through the back door. I won't explain, but we're on, and we are ready for your phone calls tonight. So where is Werby? That's the question I'm sure you're asking on Facebook. I had mentioned that I miss my co-host, and a lot of people had speculation as to where Werby is. You know, did the Republicans get him and take him off to Republican land? Did the teabaggers get him? What happened? So here's the deal. Peter is out of the country. He will be here for the show next week. And he is going to have, by this Wednesday, a photo that he will be putting up at peterwerby.com. It's PETERWERBE.com, PeterWerby.com. He's going to post the photo, and what he would like for you to do is guess where he was, and the winner will get a prize. And I said, what's the prize? He doesn't know yet, but he promises it will be good. So, Peter, out of the country, where in the world is Werby? We'll just leave it at that. And I'm going to be here today. I'll be back with him tomorrow. Everything will be back to normal. And I know he has you very well trained for the first 20 minutes of this show, because usually he does a big, long thing, which we love. We love. We're captivated by it. But the phones are usually pretty quiet because he has you trained after all of these years. But when it's me, I don't care if you call during the first 20 minutes of the show while I'm talking. Definitely a week with plenty going on. It was another depressing article in the New York Times today when I woke up and pulled it out. And the headline, millions of unemployed face years without jobs. And it says economists fear that this recovery will leave more people behind than in past recessions, if you can imagine that. And we have roughly 15 million unemployed overall. 6.3 million of the Americans who have been employed for 6 months or longer. It says, this article, yet the social safety net is already showing severe strains. Roughly 2.7 million jobless people will lose their unemployment check before the end of April, unless Congress approves the Obama administration's proposal to extend the payments, according to the Labor Department. And then it goes on to talk about, you know, they like to put a personal twist on all of these really depressing stories. And this one was about Jean Elson, who's 57 years old, lives in California, Southern California. She's been without work since she lost her job selling beauty salon equipment more than 2 years ago. She says in the several months that she's endured with neither a paycheck nor an unemployment check, she's relied on local food banks for her groceries. And this is a trend that is growing. We've talked about the trends of food stamps help, with nutrition, as I call it, and, give it a little more dignity than a lot of the media and a lot of people are willing to give it. So Jean Elson says she's learn to live without prescription medications that she's supposed to take for high blood pressure and cholesterol. This is so dangerous and so sad. And she said she's found, she used to be, this is kind of funny, an unexpected turn for this one-time stand-up comic with X-rated material. She's found Christianity as her only form of health insurance. I mean, this is what you have, is a prayer or kiss your ass goodbye? Is this really where we're at? Yeah, it sounds like it. And I know a lot of people out there can relate to this. If you aren't in a situation like this yourself, you probably know someone who is. I know plenty, and it's a sad state of affairs. Of course, men have suffered the largest numbers of job losses in this recession, but Ms. Eisen has the unfortunate distinction of being among a group, women from 45 to 64 years of age, whose long-term employment rate has grown rapidly. It's gone in the last couple of years from 7% up to 14%, according to this article. Labor experts say the economy needs 100,000 new jobs per month just to absorb entrance to the labor force. That's a lot. And some labor experts note that severe economic downturns are generally followed by powerful expansions. We want this, right? Suggesting that aggressive hiring will soon resume. But doubts remain by economists about whether such hiring can last long enough to absorb anywhere close to the millions of the unemployed. And Randy Albelda, and he's an economist at the University of Massachusetts in Boston. And he said, you have very large sets of people who have no social protections. It's true. They're landing in this netherworld. It's called the new poor. And Ms. Eisen and her husband, Jeff, they applied for food stamps after losing her job a couple of years now. And her husband is on disability because he was injured. And so they applied for food stamps. And get this, they were turned away for having too much money. The cutoff was $1,570 a month, $25 less than her husband's disability check. $25. So basically, they're paying. He gets a disability check, and I think they have $200 left over. So how do they pay their utilities? How do they pay for all of the things that it takes to get by? And now they're going to food banks and getting their food there. In the 2 years she's been without work, they have exhausted their savings of $24,000. I say, when I read this, I thought, well, they were lucky to have that in the first place. But their credit cards have gone up to $15,000. And she says, I don't know how we're still indoors. And she said, there's no bad jobs now. She saw the person, the man dressed as the Statue of Liberty. We've seen them here all over Detroit, getting you to come in and do your taxes. And she said, see that? That will be me next week. And she said, do you think this guy ever thought he'd be doing this? And, you know, it's not funny, but ironic that I've been in the car with a couple of friends of mine who are having a terrible time finding any work. Full-time, part-time, anything. And they've said the same thing. You know what? I wish I could even get that guy's job. And so very, very relatable for a lot of people out there. So kind of a depressing headline to pick up in the New York Times this morning. Can you relate? 313-298-WRIF. And I do see that we have some calls coming in, so I'll get to those in just a moment, as a couple of other crazy things that happened this week. A Texas suicide flyer, as they're calling him in the media. And this is the guy who flew into the IRS building and, killed a couple folks. And he did it. He committed suicide. And so the liberals, get this. This guy's name, Joseph Stack. The liberals are calling it a tea party on steroids. Conservatives are dismissing it as a petulant whine of a victim who couldn't hack capitalism. And this guy was so PO'd. And also, there are reports that he suffered from mental illness. I mean, who flies into a plane, into a building? Well, doesn't this seem a lot like 9/11? But why have they not gone after this guy? Even though, yes, he's gone. But why are they calling him, he's just a white Texan who hated the IRS, a teabagger. But why are they not calling him a terrorist? And when is a terrorist a terrorist? He's a white Texan. He's not an Arab. So why are they calling the news media, that's they, that's who I'm speaking of, this the accident or the incident? What defines a terrorist act? And has security been beefed like crazy because this guy did this? Not so much. And also, there was another great article. If you go to counterpunch.org, it's a great website. A guy named Dave Lindorf wrote this, and he says, grumpy white terrorists in cars and planes. And he's saying, what about the airwaves? What about airspaces? Are those being monitored and policed properly? Because this guy could just get in a plane and fly on in to that building. It was quite the thing. So what do you think about that? White Texan, why aren't they going after this guy in a bigger way and, looking at every crazy white guy, All right, let's go to the phones, 313-298-WRIF. We'll go to Scott in Westland, our first call of the night. And Scott, welcome.
Hi, Jalene. Well, there's a pretty sensational development, I guess, for those of us who are concerned about a so-called liberal agenda, and that's Obama announcing the $8 billion in loan guarantees for the first new domestic nuclear power plant for power generation in like 30 years.
Yeah, what's this? I mean, he's worse than Bush.
Well, okay, and I have to admit that this is not a surprise, that ironically, I voted for Obama, but at the same time, during the election, if you looked at their websites, that was one reason to vote for Hillary Clinton as opposed to Obama, was that Hillary Clinton was a little harder on nuclear power than Obama was. And it gets back to the same arguments You know, like he's arguing that, oh, there's like 55 of them being built, you know, around the world and stuff. But, you know, the thing is that they're environmental and economic boondoggles, you know, that basically, and even if you set aside the environmental concerns by the fact that there's no solution for storing nuclear waste.
That's right.
And also, that's also the reason why economically, even if in the near term, and I'm talking like 20, 30 years, you built a nuclear power plant and it seemed to make money generating electricity. Eventually, the expense of storing the waste that you manufactured in that like 30-year period before mm-hmm. it has to be paid off or shut down, that's going to extinct any profit that you ever made, because basically you're dealing with an almost infinite timeline into the future. You know,
you're raising
new generations of security guards to keep an eye on this stuff.
Yeah, but you know what, Scott? I heard this guy, this pro-nukes guy, the other day on the radio talking about the storage of the waste, and he made it sound so hunky-dory, like it's in a box, and then, you know, I mean, he made it sound so pretty.
Oh, well, no, I can tell you this is a true anecdote.
Okay.
And this is kind of a novel thing because, ironically, if you're talking about, like, backyard power supplies, 60 Minutes did a thing about fuel cells, just tonight, which I was grateful for. And supposedly somebody's going to be hitting the market with a new one soon. But, okay, if you wanted an alternative of that, you could have an atomic battery in your backyard. And I guess the irony was that the Russians used to do this for radio relay towers that were located on mountaintops in very remote regions of the Soviet Union.
Really?
You could take a low-level radioactive waste like strontium-90, which is radioactive. It's not that radioactive. You could stand close to it for a few minutes, and you wouldn't be taking a great risk.
But, okay.
So they would take a 55-gallon oil drum of this stuff. You would put what is called a thermoelectric material around it, and basically it absorbs the radiation from the strontium-90, and it converts it into direct current, like a battery, right?
Okay.
And see, then they would put like an inch of lead around this. So the funny thing was that here you had something that
this sounds so happy and healthy.
Well, I know. Well, you had something that had no moving parts. But see, what happened with the fall of the Soviet Union, some of these relay stations, you know, fell into disrepair and neglect. And that metal thieves, like copper thieves that we have now in the Detroit area, stole the lead shielding, which was very valuable. It was like an inch of, like, pure lead. You know?
No, wait, wow. Where are we on the timeline? When did they steal this?
I think this happened in the 1990s.
Okay.
And so they left the 55-gallon oil drum there. And so I guess apparently some guys hiking in these mountains mm-hmm. came across these barrels and noticed that they were really warm.
Oh, my God.
So, again, what they ended up doing was sleeping next to them, you know, for like 8 hours, which again, as they said, 15 minutes is like the limit you want to be around this thing when it doesn't have its, you know, shield on it.
So what happened to them?
Oh, they got very bad radioactive burns, actually, and they had to be treated for that. And this was a matter of, you know, sleeping next to the thing, you know, for several hours, for like 8 hours, you know, overnight, you know, on a very cold night in some, you know, mountain in Russia. But see,
nice heater.
But okay, but that's an example. When you think about nuclear waste, okay, when they're in an underground cavern, they have to be spaced, you know, a certain amount, you know, that actually even the idea of using that lead shielding is maybe a little expensive. So you actually have to make sure these drums of waste are like 6 feet apart or 3 feet apart, depending on what the material is, so they don't heat each other up. And, you know, so the problem, you know, there's a chance that if you had an earthquake, for instance, in one of these underground storage, you know, lockers like they wanted at Yucca Mountain,
God forbid.
They'd be crunched together, and then they would heat up. And we're not talking about a nuclear explosion. We're talking about just a fire, an underground fire that's almost impossible to put out.
Oh, my gosh.
The closest example, I guess, to that is there's a coal mine somewhere in Appalachia where, you know, they had an underground fire at a coal mine.
Uh-huh.
And because it's a coal mine, it's still burning. It's been burning for like 50 years.
Oh,
and so that's the thing, that even storing nuclear waste underground, the time scale you're talking about, are you really sure there's never going to be an earthquake, you know?
Right, exactly.
At Yucca Mountain or wherever you're planning to put it.
Yeah.
And the other, you know, a lot of the people in Europe, like even our friends Great Britain and France, they want to dump it to the bottom of the ocean, right? You know, so if you dump it, you know, to, you know, in the Marianas Trench or the Nares Deep, you know, in the center of the Atlantic, it'll never come back to haunt you, right?
Don't believe it, right?
That's what I would say. And to me, as I said, if I was president of the United States, okay, what we need nuclear steam turbines for are to drive warships, like aircraft carriers and submarines. And there are even some alternatives to that. But actually, that's the reason to keep that stuff around.
So you're saying it's all about the war economy, the state of
Yeah, yeah. So the military application, unfortunately, in the world we live in, yes, you know, there's a necessity for things like a nuclear attack submarine, you know, but.
So it's all about that, huh?
But at the same time, like I said, so if I was President of the United States, I wouldn't abandon that right away. But the idea of, like, you know, domestic nuclear power generation, as I said, it's just a boondoggle.
Yeah, let's not do it. I appreciate you calling, Scott. Lots of great information. I didn't get a chance to see that tonight, so thanks for sharing with us.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, good to talk to you.
All
right, we'll talk to you soon. I'll talk to you again, I'm sure. He's been a long time listener and caller to the show. And we have Dawn calling from Troy. And Dawn, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, and I see your topic is job loss.
Yeah, one of my uncles, he doesn't have a job right now, and he has two kids, and his wife is at a crossing guard job.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't have that much work to do, and he hasn't gotten his unemployment check in like 6 months.
So how are they coping?
My aunt is a crossing guard.
Oh yeah, so that certainly can't be enough for a family of four to get by.
Yeah. They're making a little cutbacks.
Right, yeah. Well, I know a lot of us are, you know. I mean, I've lowered my calling plan, and, I mean, I've done many, many things, and that's just the state of the world, or the United States especially, right now, you know. So is everything okay at your house?
Yeah. My dad's work is, they just hired a new guy last week, and they just fired him.
Well, it's rough out there. Well, thanks for calling the show, and I wish it's your uncle, right?
Yeah.
I wish your uncle and his family the best.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. We have Chris in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Chris, welcome to Night Call.
Oh, hi, Julian. Thank you. Boy, that last caller just breaks your heart, doesn't it?
It's awful. Those stories are horrible, and I know there's a lot of people listening who can relate, right?
Yeah, easily, yes, all across the country. Going back to our domestic terrorist the other day in Texas.
Yes.
And, of course, you know, that's what he is. And, you know, the idea of someone doing something terrible and committing suicide in an act of domestic terrorism because they don't like their economic situation isn't new. I mean, you know, there is like a thing called Guy Fawkes Day in England where a guy, because of economic situations, wanted to blow up Parliament. And that was back in the 1600s. It's, you know, obviously he is a terrorist. And the question you asked, it has its own answer involved there. Yeah, the especially right wing, but the mainstream media, unless the man is Islamic and is yelling Allah Akbar when he does his crime, they don't want to call it terrorism.
Exactly.
Well, it kind of, you know, and it begs the question, if a guy holds up a 7-Eleven and shoots a bystander while he's spouting, you know, a Quran verse, does that mean he's a terrorist as opposed to just a guy holding up a 7-Eleven somewhere?
That's a good point.
If it's a white guy doing the same thing and he spouts something from the Bible, is he not a terrorist? It's an interesting paradigm, it is.
Yes, I agree. It just really struck me this week.
Well, and as well it should, and because it is a double standard. You know, I was thinking today, just trolling around the different news sites, what I'm finding that really interesting is a lot of people, progressive Americans like you, like me, that don't seem to understand that what we're facing today are the same things that we faced in 1808 and 1860 and 1916. You know, progressive Americans, our enemies are greed and ignorance. And out of ignorance comes racism and other things. But greed and ignorance. And things are not worse today than they have ever been. There have been many times in our history, our country's history, where things were far worse than they are now. And the only way we're going to get through this is if we all stick together, stop trying to blame because we didn't get what we wanted in the first year of Obama's administration. Stop trying to blame him and work for what we need, because it's the same fight, and we're going to have to beat it the same way, together, facing the foe, not backing up.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have a good night, huh?
Chris, thanks for calling the show. Is it nice and warm down there?
Lovely in New Mexico.
So jealous. We're sitting here in Detroit waiting on a winter storm.
Well, move on down here. Get some sanity, for God's sake.
I'll think about it. I'm pretty loyal to Michigan.
You'll take care.
All right, Chris, you too. 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. So a lot of different things we're talking about, and that hasn't even covered everything that we could even talk about. I mean, we could talk about Kwame, which I think we should. I mean, you know, the thing is, on this show, we don't usually get a lot of bites when it comes to talking about Kwame. I think everyone's so sick of him. For those who are listening around the world and other places in the country, this is our former mayor, Kwame Kilpatrick, who now allegedly took bribes. I mean, we're so shocked by this, but $100,000 on the Coble Hall contracts. And we could talk about that. And also, the big conservative political action conference that went on this weekend with Glenn Beck and all of those yahoos. Oh, my gosh. Was that a spectacle? A sight for sore eyes and ears. Let's go to Rick in East Point. Ah, and Rick, you're right on point, as a matter of fact. Did you want to talk about the straw poll?
I did, as a matter of fact. Well, and
tell me, I know who won it. And this, we're talking about the straw poll that happens every year at the CPAC. And you tell us who won. I already know, but go ahead.
Okay, well, Ron Paul.
Is he your man? He's your man, isn't he? Yeah, you're Rick in East Point. I know who you are.
Yeah, not to be confused with RuPaul. That's what my progressive friends like to needle me with.
They do.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, RuPaul has his her place in the world, for sure.
But, he won by, like, 10 points over Mitt Frankenstein Romney.
Yeah, it was 31% for Ron Paul and then Mitt Romney at 22. And Sarah Palin only got 7%. I'm so confused by this whole, the whole center to right now.
Well, I'll tell you, it was the conservative conference, and these Republicans aren't conservatives, you know? And so he was voted the most favorite conservative, not necessarily the most favorite Republican, because when they announced this, there was a lot of boos, and that is all the mainstream media showed when they told the story that he won. That's all they showed, was, you know, him getting booed about it. And then they didn't even interview him or talk with any supporters of him.
They're saying that Ron Paul got no respect.
Well, he never does, you know, he never does from those guys, and he really blasted the neocons, and you know, he blasted the you know, the Fed. That's his, you know, mantra there. But it was a
we know, Rick.
But I mean, it was a real victory for you know, the anti-war conservatives.
Hey, I'm with you on the anti-war part for sure. And I was surprised. I'm also confused. I think it's very complicated what's going on with the whole kind of combining of, because there were everyone from senators, Republican leaders there. There were, you know, two people who were in the Libertarian Party, and it's just very confusing to me right now.
Well, they're all trying to figure out, you know, what a real Republican is,
I guess, or what a Republican is,
or what a real conservative is. And what I like about it is, you know, the Constitution. He's all about the Constitution, and that is about our liberties and about not having a police state here. And, you know,
I hear you on that. You know, there's a lot of things that, you know, that are agreed upon here at Night Call, right? I always picture you guys. Can I just say this? When you bring the Constitution up. I mean, and no disrespect, but I always picture you guys sitting around in white wigs.
Right, little hats. Yeah. Little turned up triangle hat. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. It's just what appears in my twisted brain. So you're pretty pleased with the outcome of the straw poll. Did you watch any of that? Did you watch Glenn Beck?
I have no use for that guy. He is, I think he is a tool for the Republicans. He'll say something good about Ron Paul one day, and then the very next day he'll be dissing him. And
yeah, he can't quite decide on anything, can he?
I have no use for him. Like I said, I think he's a tool for, you know, the military-industrial complex owns the mainstream media, and they're not going to give any guy who talks about anti-war stuff because it'd be bad for business.
Yep.
You know, it's just a shame how slanted. And how they just try to cram this idea of militarism is American,
Right? Yeah, and if you don't support the troops, then you're anti-American. Yeah. You're not patriotic.
Right. And look what they're doing to the troops. They're spreading all this depleted uranium around.
Yeah.
Not only the people in the nations where they spread that around are getting cancer and birth defects and all that, but our guys here that are coming back are all messed up.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't do a thing for the guys. They use them up and then they hang them to dry.
Yeah, they just toss them away like right. Yesterday's trash.
Yeah. And I mean, it to me it just seems like it makes us less secure to go around doing stuff that is supposedly in America's, in America's best interest, killing people and collateral damage and all that and all these other nations. They're going to figure out that hey, United States, they're the ones that are the biggest threat to any other nation.
And to ourselves.
I'm sorry, but it's
Well, it's true. We're inflaming the world. We're inflaming the terrorists, no question. And I mean, never would I excuse anyone from those activities. But, look into it, people. It's not that tough.
Don't forget that after World War II, they had Operation Paperclip, where they went around and grabbed up all the Nazis, and all the ones that were, developing the germ bombs and the nuclear stuff and the rockets and all that, well, they took them over here, and, we could use you guys, and they never got tried for war crimes or anything like that. So, in a way, I feel like we're the Fourth Reich.
That's a little scary. All right, Rick. Thanks for calling in, and congratulations to your guy.
Thank you.
All right. We'll play nice with you tonight. How about that? Okay, a quick break, and I mean quick. We'll be back. We have Stan, Caleb, Jack, Nancy, Jerry all on the line, and there is a couple of open lines, 313-298-WRIF. Julian Jordan, this is Night Call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that now it's more important than ever to buy an American-made vehicle. We at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing and want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new Lincoln MKS, the sleek Lincoln MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the Lincoln MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. We encourage you to check out our virtual showroom on our website, Demmer.com. You can check out our vehicle inventory, and you can bet that if we don't have the vehicle you're in the market for, we'll do our very best to get it for you. While you're online, we invite you to get a no-obligation internet price quote. Whether you come into our newly renovated dealership or visit us online, we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury invite you to experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood in Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
And tonight we play Where's Werby? He's been gone for 2 weeks. Where is he? Get this chick off the air. No, I kid. Peter is out of the country, and he's going to be back. And we'll be together again this coming Sunday, 1 week from tonight, right here, 11 p.m. Eastern Time on 101 WRIF. And the big thing, the contest that Peter is wanting to do is by Wednesday on his website, he'll be posting a photo of where he's been, and he wants you to guess where that is. And the person who guesses gets a prize from Peter. So go to peterwerby.com. That's W-E-R-B-E. And check in Tuesday or Wednesday. He'll have a picture up, and he'll tell us all about his travels coming up next Sunday. Now, I will check the email tonight, by the way. I haven't done that yet. calltalkyes@yahoo.com if you'd like to email. If you want to comment and you're not so shy, 313-298. Oh, wait, let's do that. 313-298-WRIF. Yeah, that's how that goes. We have someone who I believe is driving, so I'm going to get to that phone call first, because it's dangerous. Caleb?
Hi, yes.
Hi, Caleb. You're going home, driving home, and you want to talk about the Michigan smoking laws, the upcoming smoking ban?
Yes, and my outrage against them.
Okay, and, well, so people who aren't from here, or people who have been living under a rock, we May 1st are going smoke-free in Michigan.
Yes, correct. And I believe that the outlawing of smoking in bars and restaurants and establishments like that shouldn't be up to the Michigan government or, you know, our government, but because I know we vote on these things, but we really don't. I don't think it should be up to them. I think it should be up to, you know, the establishment owner, the person that pays their taxes on the establishment, their business. You know, if they want to have smoking in their bar, they should be allowed to have smoking in their bar or restaurant because, you know, they pay taxes just like everybody else. And, you know, it's kind of ridiculous that they're going to make it essentially illegal to smoke inside of a, you know, a public building like a bar. I mean, could you imagine having to pay a cover charge at, say, a nightclub, go in there, being a smoker, having to go outside, and some of these nightclubs in Michigan here, you got to go up a couple flights of stairs just to get to them, and then having to go down the flights of stairs and to smoke your cigarette. And, I mean, yeah, it's a great way to make people want to quit or think about quitting, just like taxing.
It may make it a little harder, right? Yeah. Well, you know, I tell you, I mean, I get what you're saying. I really do. And when I go out, I don't go out a lot, but when I do, and if I drink, I usually have a smoke. And I have no problem going outside. I did it just 3 weeks ago or a month ago at the Magic Bag. I didn't have a problem with it. I mean, I think people are going to get more used to it than you think, and the establishments will start having, you know, heaters and areas somewhere where they can go. You know what I'm saying? I think it'll be okay in the end. I lived in Miami a few years ago, and Florida's smoke-free down there. And I have to say, even though I was, you know, like to drink and smoke at the same time every now and then, I'd go to the bars or shows or whatever, and it just didn't seem like that big of a deal, although I know it's warmer down there.
Yeah, well, that's true. It is. I mean, Michigan's freezing, but
I know.
I figure the cold weather is just a punishment for me killing myself anyway.
Well, see, and you know, I mean, you have the other thing that I think is real important, and that if Peter were here, he'd be railing away about this. But I do agree that secondhand smoke is more cancer causing. It's more dangerous than the person who's smoking it. So for people who really don't want to even have that near them, I think it's a kind of a victory for them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it could be argued either way.
Either way. I know. It's just going to be weird, and there will be an adjustment period for these establishments and their owners, and I think everything will balance out in the end.
I lived in Chicago when I was in the military.
Yeah.
And I 4 or 5 hour train ride to come home, you know. And I'd get off the train, and the first thing I'd want to do while I waited for a taxi was smoke a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in Chicago, you can't smoke within 15 feet of the door. I got a ticket for smoking a cigarette.
Really? How much?
10 feet of the door. $65 ticket.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm getting, okay, so now I have to pay more money for that. It just seems like.
Yeah, smokers get beat up pretty good. I agree.
Yes. I don't like the freedom, I guess, getting taken away from me.
I got to tell you, when I go to a restaurant, And it's smoking. It to me, it's just a big gagger. I don't enjoy it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I could see. I understand smoking sections in restaurants and small restaurants. I believe should not have smoking.
Yeah. Oh God, I went to this little diner over in where was that? Oh, Hazel Park or somewhere around there, and I thought I was gonna die. I was like, I couldn't even join. I'm like, we're out of here.
I guess I could see that.
Yeah, it was very unpleasant. I mean, this cute little old man was sitting kind of catty corner for me, just blowing it in my face. And I'm having breakfast. Like, no, this isn't working for me. So in some ways, I am looking forward to it. But, you know, I hear you, Caleb. I'll see you outside.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. All right. Thanks for calling Night Call.
Bye.
All right, bye. And good luck with that. You'll be okay. You'll be all right. Let's go to Nancy in Royal Oak. We were talking about Kwame Kilpatrick. And Nancy, what are your thoughts?
Kwame Kilpatrick, I'm all for the judge. He's violating his probation. I don't think he should have been let to leave the state of Michigan. People are giving him money he can't account for. But on the previous call on the smoking thing, everybody's so worried about the cigarette smoke. You know how much other things in this environment and what we intake in our body are killing us, probably worse than the cigarette.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's go after the chemical companies and all of that. You know what I mean? I hear you, but I don't know. Cigarettes in a small space, it can be pretty intrusive, really.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you. I go outside of my mother's house and so forth. I don't mind going outside. But it's like, what is in our food? You'd be amazed. I was reading some medical journals, research and studies that actually pasteurized milk we buy from the store is not made for human consumption, that they have to boil it at 300 and some degrees and it boils everything out, so then they add synthetic vitamin D and calcium and everything in it.
Yeah, you know what? I've always been freaked out by the idea of cow's milk anyway. I mean, we are the only species that drinks the cow, the milk of another species. It's strange.
Right.
And it is not good for you. If you're going to drink it, drink organic for sure.
Exactly. And then when it's 20 below zero with the wind chill factor and we're all sitting in a red light in traffic, we finally see what comes out of our exhaust that we don't see.
Oh, yeah. It's nasty.
But anyway, the Kwame Kilpatrick thing is I used to work in the city of Detroit and pay city taxes, and I'm sure glad I don't pay any taxes in Detroit. But, you know, he violated probation. Anybody else, any average Joe Blow on the street that would violate probation, goes to jail.
Yeah, he could not pay that money by 5 p.m. last week. And then now the FBI agents are contending in sworn statements that they have grounds to believe that former ex-Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick and his associates used the mayor's office to run a criminal enterprise.
Oh, I believe it.
Ooh.
I'm going to be honest with you, and I don't care who hears me or who recognizes my voice, but about 15 years ago, I was arrested in the city of Detroit.
Yeah?
For a stupid thing over $10 worth of a substance, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm a convicted felon for the rest of my life, over $10.
That's a crock.
$10.
Yeah.
And I was handcuffed. And
that's your drug war at work right there. Ridiculous.
Three times right in the middle of the intersection in broad daylight. And in order for me to not be on lifetime probation or go to trial, I had to lie to the judge and say something that I didn't do. My intent to deliver was into my body. But I had to say my intent was to take it home and share it with somebody in order to stay out of jail or get lifetime probation over $10.
Yeah, that's okay. Ridiculous.
And I was too scared. I don't trust police anywhere now because I was too scared because they made up so many things about me. You know, I admitted what I did. I had no problem with that.
Yeah, like, hey, I have it. Yeah.
Well, I did. You know, this was 15 years ago. I admit it, what I did. But for me to have to lie, and when I went to tell the judge the truth, the only intent was for me to put it in my body. He said, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. And my attorney shut me up, and which was a public defender, the first, usually a higher one, but couldn't at the time.
Yeah.
And said, well,
usually,
you,
huh?
You have to tell him this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that, Nancy. You know, I'll tell you. Well, just, you know,
but
try to keep it on the up and up.
Of course, do anything. I mean, police brutality. I mean, I'm handcuffed.
Yeah.
And the lady cop smacks me across the face for looking at her, knocks my glasses off. I asked if somebody could pick out my glasses, and she came at me again. You know, and it's like, and here they made up so many things about me that were so-called dropped because they didn't have anything. I was too scared to do anything because you know, but Kwame Kilpatrick.
Yeah.
That judge, I am all for that judge. He violated probation.
Yeah, bye-bye, Kwame. We'll see. He's going to go back to that same cell. They've got him warmed up and waiting for him. Thanks, Nancy, for calling Night Call tonight, and the best of luck to you. See, Jerry from St. Clair Shores would like to chit-chat about terrorists. How do you chit-chat about terrorists? Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Joanne. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to say that it seems like terrorism is defined more about who's carrying out the act than
right.
It is the act itself.
Exactly. We were talking, we'll remind, it's people have just joined the program. We were talking about Mr. Joe Stack, who flew his plane into an IRS building, killed some folks, and committed suicide, calling it an accident, and not calling him a terrorist. But I would say he is a domestic terrorist. I mean, what is different from him and the guys who on 9/11 and in what they did? And then let's talk about Timothy McVeigh.
Well, exactly. Well, I feel that he is more like the guys at 9/11, but even I question, I know I'll raise a lot of hackles with this, I question if even 9/11 was a terrorist attack. When you have the people who are poor, disenfranchised, minorities are oppressed, use the tools of violence to fight against that kind of oppression or what they see as oppression, we call that criminal terrorism.
Yep.
But when the wealthy, the powerful, the elite try to monopolize violence and use their militaries to drop bombs on villages and say that's just a tragic act of collateral damage.
Yeah, it was necessary.
And it justified violence. You know, and that's what's got to change. So I see Joe Stack as just another one of the disenfranchised, the people who've been abused by the system and feel that when they have nothing more to lose.
But he also is a man who killed innocent people to make a point, which is not okay.
Well, I agree, but you know, it's you know, it's kind of difficult as an American citizen that pays taxes, and those taxes go to a military that bombs innocent villages.
I agree. I am not happy at all about where my tax dollars are going. But you'll never see me flying a plane into a building to protest it. You might see me at a protest. You may hear me, rail against it here, but or wherever, you know. But that's as far as it goes.
I think it's a big mistake by the powerful and the elite to think that they would hold a monopoly on violence.
Yeah, well, they're doing a pretty damn good job of it.
Well, that may change.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a sign, but I mean, this guy was also mentally ill, had a lot that triggered this, so let's hope that this does not happen again.
Well, I think whole societies could
fingers crossed.
Be as ill as ours and feel that somehow we're justified in bombing villages, and there's just the scale of what we do as compared to the scale of, you know, 3,000 and some people died on 9/11, which is a terrible tragedy, and I'll be the first to admit that, but I don't see how that justifies our response when I'm willing to bet any money, and it's hard to get accurate figures on this, but I'm sure there have been millions of innocent Iraqis and Afghani civilians that have died, and this is what
oh, absolutely millions.
In the pursuit of justice?
Yeah, for what? Absolutely. Jerry, thanks for calling Night Call.
Thank you.
Appreciate your phone call, calling in from St. Clair Shores, Michigan tonight. And let's go to Jack in Ann Arbor, who's been hanging out for a while. We talked about Obama and nuclear power and plants earlier. And did you say you have a pro-nuclear point, Jack?
Yeah, I do, actually. It's Jeff, actually. But
oh, Jeff, okay.
Yeah, no problem. Well, you know, one of your callers earlier said something about ignorance and we need to make sure we have the facts. And I am somebody who actually works in a sector that works very closely with nuclear power.
Okay.
There is a lot of ignorance about what nuclear power is and what kinds of nuclear power we can generate. Now, that said, I don't totally agree with Obama's approach about what he's doing to fund the current nuclear energy, but there is a program that was under Bill Clinton in the 1990s, and there is a kind of reactor known as the IFR. It's in the Integral Fast Reactor. And this particular kind of nuclear reactor actually uses the same nuclear waste that we store under Yucca Mountain as fuel. And the proof of concept in this particular thing was they had it somewhere in the 90% range of efficiency. And so what that means is you could take nuclear waste, mm-hmm. you could feed it into this reactor, 90% of it would be used as fuel to generate power, and only 10% would be left over with no adverse effects. Now again, this was a pretty...
Except there's still something left over.
There is still something left over, without a doubt, but it's only 10% of what it was. Okay? So, and that's a key point. So again, the problems with the program was that it was never proofed to be full scale. It was only proofed on a small concept.
Why was that, do you think?
You know, there's various theories. One of the theories was that the government killed it, you know, because it was a threat to the utility companies, which I kind of agree with. But, you know, there's a number of things around there. But there are several books out there, and so I really encourage anybody who, you know, is frightened of nuclear power or what it is to look into this technology, because what it illustrates is that the nuclear power that we're talking about sort of in the future or where we're going is very, very different than the nuclear power we had at Three Mile Island in the 70s.
I'm sure it is. But I got to tell you, I think the future of nuclear power should be bye-bye.
I understand why you say that.
Yeah.
I do understand it.
Yeah.
You know, there are experiments right now where they're talking about fusion reactors, and they're trying to get hydrogen atoms to fuse together through laser technology, which is extremely clean. There's no bad byproducts. It's just one of those things where I just want people to understand that there's far more to it than what people think or what they see. Or, you know, we've kind of been bashing the mainstream media, what the media is going to present, because, you know, the media is all about scaring about everything.
You've got that right, and that's why,
So all I'm saying is just don't believe what you hear. Just look it up. It doesn't take a lot of research. The IFR, the Integral Fast Reactor, is a fascinating technology, and it really could be the wave of the future. It really could be a way for us to take this leftover nuclear waste that we have right now
and use it again.
And have something beneficial.
I'm still against it, but Jeff, I appreciate you calling from Ann Arbor, all right?
Yeah.
I'm all for the future being green. How about solar? How about wind? Let's talk about those kind of things. And I know, surprising. Justin in Ipsy calling about the upcoming Michigan smoking ban. Justin, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Julian.
Welcome.
Hey.
What do you think about it?
Well, I'm just commenting. First off, I've been listening to the show for a long time.
Yeah.
I honestly, first-time caller, but...
Welcome.
Thank you. You guys are very entertaining.
Well, yeah, and my other half's not even here.
I know, and that, you know, but, hey, it's just the same.
Well, that's funny, because some people say it's totally different, but I'm glad that maybe you just, I don't know, we think a lot alike, Peter and I. He just has been on the planet a little bit longer.
You guys play off each other. It's great. Like,
that's for sure.
It's very entertaining.
Well, we'll be back together again next week. Any guesses on where Werby went? Where would Peter Werby go?
I don't know.
It's out of the country.
Out of the country.
Yeah.
Yugoslavia.
I'm not saying yes or no. I'm just wondering. I'm just curious what people think.
Hey, I just threw out a random guess because it could be somewhere obscure no one would ever think of.
Okay, one vote for Yugoslavia from Justin. Okay, how about the smoking ban?
The smoking ban. I am a smoker. I have been. There is the secondhand smoke issue. Now, when you go to restaurants, as a smoker, personally,
yeah.
when I... I go non-smoking when I go in.
Yeah, I mean, eating and smoking is a little weird, but people do it, and no judging. I just don't want to do it.
Exactly, because, and as a smoker, I can honestly say, like, I see families, you know, like, it's one thing if you do it at, like, maybe the bar area, like, where you're sitting, but not where you're, you know, families of four or five, whatever.
In the dining room, right.
Exactly. And the biggest thing is that, I mean, come on, is it really that big of a deal to actually go outside and interrupt your meal? If you cannot sit for half hour,
I agree.
Hour, however long your meal is, if you cannot sit for that long of a time without having a cigarette, then you probably need to quit.
Get yourself some Chantix.
Yeah, something. But and I'm
Nicorette.
And I'm not trying to be a hypocrite by any means. I am a smoker.
But you get it.
But exactly.
You get what I'm saying.
The whole thing is if you can't go that short of time to have one meal in a restaurant without having a cigarette, I mean, come on.
I know. It's a little scary.
Or, like, you know how you would get up and go to the restroom?
Yeah.
That's no different than getting up, going outside.
Yeah.
It's no different.
Go have a couple puffs and come back in and rock on.
Exactly. And that's the whole thing. And it just blows my mind how so many people... And it's so funny because there's a lot of smokers that aren't really speaking up on this.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, I mean, if you're a heavy smoker, you know, light smoker, it doesn't matter. The whole fact is that it's not that big of a deal. And even like, say, 15, how many schools in Michigan have the drug-free school zone, tobacco-free, right?
Uh-huh.
How many parents do you think are driving their kids to high school, elementary, and it's a fact.
With the Marlboro hanging out their mouth.
Yeah. But the whole thing is that realistically, I mean, people can hate me, they can love me for what I'm saying, but you got to look at it at both sides.
I think everyone, after a while, will be amazed how when they go home after a night out, how they don't smell like... It's nice. It really
is.
It's nice to have clean air, you know? I don't know. I know that the smokers are pretty PO'd at us right now, Justin. I mean, you don't get this voice that I have without having a couple cigs in your day, okay?
Exactly.
All right. Justin, thanks for calling Night Call tonight.
Oh, for sure. I'll be calling next week. I hope I can get through.
You will. You'll get through. Peter Breeze is through the phone calls a little faster than I do.
Oh, I would love to talk to both of you guys next Sunday.
Or some would call it cutting them off.
Yeah. Hey, I totally understand. A lot of people are probably PO'd at what I just said.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it'll all be better. I really believe it. Justin, thanks for calling.
Thank you so much.
Good to talk to you. All right. You have a good week. And let's see. Okay, we'll take one more phone call, then a quick break, and then back to your phone calls. And I think we'll go to Windsor, Canada, and talk to Brady, who wants to talk about our former mayor.
Okay. Call me. I enjoy your show. I've listened to the show since 1984. You and Peter are really great. Now, I want to talk about your former mayor, Kwame Kilpatrick.
Yeah.
Now, I'm a born and bred Windsorite, but my mother, rest her soul, will be 92 years old. She was born in Detroit. And Detroit has had a culture of corruption going back, generations.
Because yeah.
My mother was 12 years old in 1930. There was a WJR, one of the stations in Detroit, ran an expose about how Detroit was run by the Ku Klux Klan and the mob. And the reporter, whose name I believe was Jerry Buckley, Mom used to tell my two sisters and me about this all the time, had just given the report and had gotten into the elevator, and somebody shot him in the elevator, probably somebody from either the mob or the Ku Klux Klan, and had shot him to death in the elevator.
The reporter?
A silence on it. Pardon me?
The reporter was shot?
The reporter, yes. His name was Jerry Buckley. It was in 1930. And I happen to be African-Canadian. And,
sweet.
My grandfather played the Negro Leagues for the Chicago American Giants.
Did he really?
16, yes. And my Uncle Ronald he's my mother's only surviving sibling. He lives on the east side of Detroit, where in his neighborhood there happens to be 125 foreclosed homes on east. His part of the city, and he's got my my grandfather's Chicago American Giants uniform bottom, and not far from where he used to live, maybe a mile away, 1925, the Ku Klux Klan held a giant crossburning that was attended by something like 50,000 people.
What?
This whole situation in Detroit with the corruption and the one juror, I guess, held out in the Sam Little convicted him because she said it was a racist plot. That situation over there, you know, it's been around for generations.
Yeah.
Even when I was a boy, I mean, I was 14. I just turned 14 when the riot occurred in 67. So it's not, you know, it's just that you just have to find a way to surmount these problems, because if Detroit goes down, it'll take all, not just southeastern Michigan and maybe Michigan down,
yeah,
but our economy here in southwestern Ontario, especially Windsor, is so tied in with your economy that it'll just pancake everything.
That's true.
Out of the border too.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, we'll keep our chin up. And, you know, this is just the way it is, right? It is the way it is here in Detroit. That's my mob voice. Okay. Well, he left. He didn't even laugh or anything. He just hung up. No, I'm just kidding. Thanks for calling over from Canada. And, oh, yeah, quick break. Must take a break. We'll be right back here on Night Call. We'll take your calls at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Blowing out 39 birthday candles with Bud Light and the Rip. It's 39 bars and 39 days.
Hey, for a birthday this big, we're hitting every corner Metro Detroit to celebrate.
Best of all, you get the presents, like limited edition tees and stickers.
Get the details at party locations at WRIF.com.
Plus, register to win the grand prize, a 46-inch Sharp Aquas flat screen TV. 39 bars in 39 days. From Bud Light, the sure sign of a good time. Here we go at 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
What are the 10 stupidest mistakes men make when facing divorce? Find out at a complimentary seminar sponsored by the domestic litigation firm of Cordell & Cordell, Thursday evening, February 25th. Registration begins at 6 p.m. Seminar starts sharply at 6:30 p.m. at the Westin Southfield, Detroit at 1500 Town Center.
Guys often have to work a little harder to be awarded primary custody, but when you're disadvantaged, you'll continue to be so unless you do what you can to help yourself.
Attorney Joe Cordell of Cordell & Cordell is quoted by the Wall Street Journal. Find out what actions can have disastrous consequences during a divorce and how to continue to play a key role in your children's lives. If you're facing a divorce, perhaps one you don't even want, you must attend this free seminar. Space is limited. Register today by calling Cordell & Cordell at 313-465-1999. That's 465-1999. Or register online at CordellCordell.com. That's CordellCordell.com.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan.
Jolene Jordan solo, flying solo tonight. Peter Werby back in the studio here at WRIF. Next Sunday night, 11 o'clock Eastern sharp, we'll be together again. He's been out of the country, and he wants to know where you think he was. So if you go by Wednesday to peterwerby.com, W-E-R-B-E, he'll be posting a photo. You guess right. You're the first person to guess right. Then you'll win a prize from Night Call. So check that out. And I'm excited. I'm also going to be doing an interview with him that I believe will be on next Sunday night at 1 o'clock after we do the live portion of this program. And we'll talk all about where he's been and what he's been up to and what he's learned along the way. And I'm sure he had a little bit of fun no matter where he was, if I know Peter. Okay, we're taking your phone calls, talking about a variety of issues, the smoking ban in Michigan, Kwame Kilpatrick, talking about the Conservative Political Action Conference. And I mean, I have this whole diatribe planned to go after Glenn Beck. Why do I waste my breath? And, you know, where was Sarah Palin at that anyway? Healthcare Summit coming up this Thursday. It's going to be televised. used, and that's something that that Obama's putting together, trying to, you know, put some air back into this health care fiasco. Meanwhile, some states are trying to make it their own thing and have their own single-payer health care system. California currently talking about doing something like that. So, also talking about the guy, the Texas suicide flyer, who flew into the IRS building and committed suicide, killed a couple folks, PO'd at the IRS. And let's see, we're going to go in order of who's been hanging on the longest so we don't torture you online anymore. It's Tony in Clinton Township. Hi, Tony.
Oh, hey, how you doing?
There you are. Hi. Welcome.
You know, I know that there was some other guy talking about terrorism on here earlier before, and I was like, I just cannot sit back and not say anything about it.
Wow, so you're mad. What, are you mad at him?
No, I'm not mad at him. It's just, I'm mad at just like, just the whole situation.
You mean how they're basically not calling this guy really a terrorist, the one who flew into the building, just this white guy from Texas, and the fact that, you know, that he's not Islamic, that this is just an incident. He just committed suicide. He's angry at the government.
Yeah, it's like every day this world is plagued by something going on like that, some crazy event. And it's just, I'm not having it. You know, I'm old. I'm getting kind of retired. It's crazy. And it's just not worth it to be doing these things inside the United States of America any longer.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think we've been pretty lucky that it hasn't happened more.
Yeah, you know, I see where you're coming. I see where you're coming with that easily, because with security and stuff like that, people got these new crazy weapons. They're bringing bombs and toothpaste things.
In their underwear and their shoes.
Underwear, they got it. They're freaking under the sleeves, you know, it's some crazy new invention that we got going on in the 2000s. Some nuts that we've learned. And something just crazy, but it's that with... I'm sorry, quiet down there, we're getting into it. It's just not going any longer, and I'm sitting back here, my dog's getting a little crazy.
What kind of dog do you have?
Oh, Siberian Husky.
Give him a little
Siberian Husky.
Give him a little pet from Peter and I.
Oh, he's
we love dogs.
He's crazy, he's got crazy eyes, we call him sometimes crazy eyes.
More dogs, less war.
Yeah, see, exactly. Or I wish we could just ride huge dogs into war.
Right, like, ride huge dogs into war. Wow. Whew.
Yeah, man. Like, big Siberian Huskies just coming through, you know. There's no way you can stop us. Bam.
All right. Thanks, Tony. You have a good night.
All right.
We'll ride that big dog into the sky, off into the sunset. Tony and his Siberian Husky. Chuck in Grosse Pointe Farms wanting to talk about the Michigan smoking ban. Oh, yeah. People want to talk about this because it's getting closer. It's May 1st, right, Chuck?
Yeah, it's coming right up, Jillian. And I was a smoker, too, for about two weeks when I was in fifth grade. First of all, first-time caller, and I've listened to you and Peter for years and years. And I really like your show. And he can stay in the Netherlands for another month if he wants, so you're doing just fine.
Oh, you're so sweet. But I don't want him to. I thought he was going to be back tonight, and I was pretty bummed when I found out he wasn't.
No problem. As a matter of fact, if you were a smoker, it's made you such a sexy, sultry voice. It hasn't hurt you a bit, my dear.
Well, as of today, right?
Yes, but what I guess I'm more concerned about is if they're going to do a ban, why are the casinos and other areas getting a waiver?
It's Indian owned. That's why.
Oh, see, I just thought maybe it was payola or something.
Yeah, American Indian owned, so they're exempt.
Oh, and quickly on the energy thing.
Yeah.
I was watching 60 Minutes tonight, and they've got a new invention, and they've tested it in California at FedEx and Google. It's called the Bloombox, and it's basically a device that can run on natural gas and plates made of beach sand that are painted and inked on both sides, and it can produce five times as much energy as a solar panel and take up like a postage stamp compared compared to the roof solar panels that they have out there. So there is some more alternatives. I'm with you on solar and wind, but you need to find something that's efficient that we can actually maybe do away with the grid.
Mass produce, and yeah.
Everybody have a little box in their backyard,
right,
and we don't have to worry about DTE.
I have a friend in Washington State who has lived off the grid for years and years.
Wonderful.
She sells the energy, the power, back to the power company. It's the most beautiful thing ever.
That is great. Yeah.
I know.
More people do that.
I know. You know, she's a good little hippie. I guess I'm one of these neo-hippie city girls, you know.
And then we could pass something else, you know. If they want to ban smoking, I just say, like I did in fifth grade,
yeah?
Can't catch a buzz, why smoke it?
Okay.
God bless you, Jillian.
Wise words. It's from Chuck, first-time caller. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
We'll see you soon.
Okay, absolutely. That was fun. You have a good one, too. That was good. Jason also wants to talk about smoking. He's in Ann Arbor. Welcome to Night Call.
Hello?
Hi, Jason.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Okay, I think the government is completely stuck between trying to make it look like they care about us.
Yeah.
And just trying to rip us off, because I go to school and they say no smoking at school. And my understanding is the school gets most of its money from the government. And the government gets a lot of money from the smokers. So when I'm hiding, smoking a cigarette, hoping I don't get caught, my whole brain is messed up because it doesn't make any sense.
You have really thought about this.
Yeah, I really like to smoke cigarettes.
You have connected the dots, like, unbelievably on this, Jason.
But it drives me mad, especially because if they really cared about us, our health, they would just make it illegal.
Why? Well, then you'd really be pissed.
I would. But
oh, come on, man. You can't even go that far. Now, how many cigarettes do you smoke a day?
About a pack.
Pack a day? What kind of cigarettes?
Whatever's on sale.
Okay. All right. You're not picky. Do you smoke in your apartment, in your house?
Yeah.
Yeah? All right.
Yeah, but I don't understand why they would go, like, I'm sure that the people in the restaurants decided they don't want to sit in a smoky restaurant, so that's, you know, I'm sure that came from that.
I don't enjoy it. Personally, I think it gags me.
Yeah, it's kind of annoying.
I mean, I've kind of gotten used to it, but when I moved back from Florida to Michigan, where you couldn't smoke inside there, and moved back here, it freaked me out. I have to say, it took me a long time to get used to it. Now I'm used to it. I've been back for years, but it was kind of nice. Do you think maybe you'll get used to it?
I'm sure I will.
You're gonna have to.
Yeah.
Okay.
I really don't care about it more. I just don't like how they sugarcoat all these laws, and with the drinking and driving, it's okay to sell alcohol and marijuana is still legal.
Right.
But they want to protect the kids from cigarettes, and you know, I wish they would just make up their mind if they want to rip us off and just be honest about it, or if they want us to be healthy.
Okay, Jason.
Yeah.
All right. I appreciate you calling tonight.
Thank you.
All right. Rock on there in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I love Ann Arbor. We have a couple of open lines, so if you want to talk about smoking, the IRS, it looks like we have someone on hold who would like to talk about, hey, Haiti, have we forgotten about that? I know I haven't. And well, one thing I'll say about Haiti is these people trying to get these contracts down there, and it's a little bit scary. But 313-298 WRIF, if you would like to call the show. We have this segment, one left after that, and then a couple of interviews with Peter Werby. Yeah, so it's like he'll be here tonight. So that's good news. Jeff from Allen Park, and yes, let's do talk about Haiti. Hi, Jeff.
It's Jeff. How you doing?
Jess?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, hi, Jess.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Good.
I've been watching a lot of the news with Haiti and stuff, and I feel bad for the Haitians. I really do.
Uh-oh.
And
I'm scared. I'm scared of what you're going to say.
I don't think we should be sending as much money as we are to the Haitians. Like, I mean,
how much are we sending? I mean, compared,
I heard it was around like $64 billion we've spent on Haiti so far.
Mm-hmm. Who spent it? On the government or the people who are donating?
I think it's, I mean, some of it's got to be donations.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure most of it's funded by the government.
Okay, so where do you want the money to go instead?
To our people, to the Americans.
Okay, I mean, which Americans?
All the U.S., like the homeless, I mean, battered women's shelters, I mean, the poor people, the people who need it. When I'm on my way to work and I drive down Gratiot Avenue and I look over at, you know, a giant field that's full of homeless people.
Horrible.
That have tents pitched, why aren't we helping the homeless
here? Well, that we should have been, you should have been asking that question before Haiti even happened.
Well, I mean, I still ask those questions. I mean, we still have...
But, you know, this is what something that a lot of people have brought up after Haiti, and I've heard it a lot, and, you know, I get your point, and I am so for helping, you know, people who are living in poverty. I mean, that is my whole thing, you know. Everything revolves around that and helping out to those and peace and social justice and all those kinds of things. But you needed to be thinking about it before, and you know what? Those people need our help. We've been dicking around with those people for so long, and so many people of power have been dicking around with the people of Haiti. You know what? They deserve our help, I have to say.
Well, I agree they deserve help, but I don't make $64 billion of help.
Okay, well, I mean, that's your opinion. I just say we need to do as much as we can.
Right.
You know, but hey, the homeless people, you know, hey, old good Bill Clinton shut down all of those mental hospitals. And so that's why you see more of them on the streets. It's a shame. And our government should be very ashamed of themselves for allowing the richest country in the world to treat people like that.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah. All right. So we agree on that. All right, Jeff. Thanks.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Have a good one. And drive safe. Hang up and drive. I'm going to be bossy. Ted in Ann Arbor about the IRS. Hi. Ted, turn your radio down.
How you doing, Jalene?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad at all.
Great.
I want to talk about Joe Stack.
Yeah, Joe Stack. He's the Texan who flew that plane on into the IRS building.
Yep. Did you read what he wrote on the internet?
I did. I did.
And you still feel that he's a terrorist after all that? And you think that he's...
I think he's a domestic terrorist. Absolutely. Anyone who flies a plane into a building, especially a governmental building, my God, and kills people, is a domestic terrorist.
What better building?
Just because he's pissed off, just like Timothy McVeigh was pissed off.
No.
Yes. And he was mentally ill.
Mm-mm. So Timothy McVeigh was mentally ill?
Probably.
So Martin Luther King was mentally ill because he...
Oh, come on.
I'm just asking.
Come on. Don't even.
Well, I'll tell you what.
That's a stretch, Ted.
I'll tell you what I think. I think Joe Stack's a hero. That's what I think.
Why?
Because he is the example of where this country is absolutely headed.
Well, why is it okay for him to use violence?
Why is it okay for our government to use violence? Have you seen what our police forces are doing in this country?
Listen, I'm with you on that. I'm with you on
400. They killed 400 people last year, a little over 400 people with nonviolent methods.
Okay, but is it up to you?
Shooting, yes.
To fly your plane into a building and kill people? That's there's no justification for that. I'm sorry. Okay, burning his house down, one thing. Burn it. I don't give a you know what. Burn it down. But keep it. If you want to burn property, ruin property, kill people, whatever, you know, first of all, try not to kill someone when you're protesting. There's a rule number one.
So how
burn your own property.
Okay, let me ask you this question, though.
Okay.
What if they kill you while you're protesting? 113 people last year in this country were killed while protesting.
While protesting. Well, listen, I've been to a lot of protests. And
shot a woman.
I've never been shot. I've been shot at with pepper spray many times.
What is the difference? They shouldn't be allowed to do that.
Usually, I agree.
Where do you draw the line, Julian? Where is enough enough? Where do you sleep with your gun at night? When are you going to stand up and fight?
Ooh, I don't have a gun.
They will send the military in, and they will dominate this nation anytime they choose to. Do you realize right now in Monroe County, a week and a half ago, I saw UN troops driving down the road? What are UN troops doing in our country?
I really don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. How do you know that they were UN troops?
Because it says United Nations on the door.
How do you know they're...
There's a Nike base down there.
What?
A deserted military base in Monroe County. It's been there for 50 years.
Hmm. Are you a conspiracy guy, Ted?
I don't believe in conspiracies. I believe in facts.
Okay.
It's very, very simple. I don't believe when somebody tells me, well, they did this because of this, I don't believe in any of that. I believe that people should educate themselves.
Okay, let's take this in a different direction. What are you doing? Because you're pissed, and I get it.
Oh,
but
I'm so mad.
I know you're mad. What are you doing to protect yourself, since you seem kind of paranoid? I mean, not that you shouldn't be.
Okay, do you know who the famous philosopher Nietzsche is?
Sure.
Okay, you know, he once said that there's a fine line between paranoia and awareness.
Okay.
Okay, so I don't think that being maybe a little paranoid of
a
government
thing?
That is passing laws.
Okay, but what are you doing? Answer my question.
What do you mean?
To protect yourself in case they come after you.
Who? In case who comes after me?
That's what you keep talking about. They.
The government?
The police state?
We're living in a police state.
I understand, but what are you doing about it? What are you doing about it other than flying into a building and killing yourself?
Well, the thing I do on a daily basis is I try to educate as many people as I can. I try to motivate through a very peaceful way as many Americans as I can to go out and please educate themselves to really what's going on.
Read a book or something,
American,
huh?
You know, that at one time in this country, that was a privilege to call yourself an American. People looked up to America. Now we're a bunch of sheeple. We do as we're told. We want everything handed to us.
Oh, I wish I had my little sheep noise right here with me. Darn it.
Well, I'm just telling you, you know, it's utterly ridiculous, and we believe everything that they're telling us. Just exactly like Joe Stack said, we believe everything we're handed.
I'm not going to put him on a pedestal. I'm sorry.
I'm not saying he should be placed on a pedestal.
Yeah.
You know what? He should be, you know what? He should be placed in a place where we look at the situation that he was put in, and what do they expect every single American to do? There are 11 million Americans right now that have lost their home.
Well, hopefully not all of those people are going to fly into buildings, because I'll tell you what, I thought the government thinks it's these Islamic terrorists that we need to be worried about, but
well,
from the way you're talking, you're kind of...
That's exactly what they want you to say.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. But what you're saying is that you want the American. What you're saying is that you think that he had every right to be that mad, and that you completely understand why he flew that into the building. So now you're opening it up for those 11 million other people to do the same.
Absolutely.
Wow, that's a little scary. Okay, Ted, that's a little scary. I wouldn't encourage that at all. I understand being mad, but man, this guy took it way too far. And this is what makes me so mad. Why is this guy not being demonized, at least in the media? You know, he was mad. He was so angry. I can see why he took his little plane and killed those people and himself. You know, give me a break. You know, burn your own house down, like I said. I don't care. Burn away. Burn, burn, burn. Okay, 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. Still a couple open lines. We have Mike in Brighton. Mike, I don't know what you want to talk about. What is it?
Well, I was going to talk about smoking, but if I can extend on the topic of terrorism.
Sure.
Okay, well, I mean, I totally agree with you. If somebody's mad at the IRS, it doesn't mean that they should go and fly into the building. Today I bought a lotto ticket from... a vending machine, and it ate my $2, but it doesn't mean that I should hold up the store.
Or go down to the Michigan Lotto office and fly into their, you know, building.
Right, right.
Right.
Well, you know,
silly.
I mean, in my opinion, I think,
really?
You know, people confuse terrorism, in my opinion, this is my opinion,
okay.
It's kind of a byproduct of nationalism, or an illusion of nationalism, or a nationalistic train of thought.
Okay.
Just like, you know, everybody points his finger saying terrorists are from the Middle East, and terrorists are, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But
yeah.
Terrorism's been here in America since, you know, we've been established. People have been fighting against establishment and everything.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think it's kind of futile and everything that, you know, people are fighting for something they're never really going to get. People want to overthrow the government. People want to blow up buildings and all this. But in the end, I mean, I can appreciate somebody's desire to, you know, to be held to a just cause or what they feel is a just cause, even if I don't feel it's a just cause.
Yeah, but there's other ways of doing it, right?
Most definitely. I mean, you can write something. We've got the press. You know, we do have some freedoms that the government does.
Yeah.
Organize events.
Organize people. Get the people together or go out in the streets and tell them.
Most definitely. And I mean, totally. I mean, you know, anybody can go and talk to people or start a charity event for something or, for, you know, go to your local town hall, talk about issues. I mean, there's other ways to go about it. And I mean, I think, you know, for people to sympathize with, you know, people blowing up buildings or flying into buildings or.
I just am baffled by it.
Well, it makes no sense.
Because after 9/11 and up until today, we know that there are so many people out there who are like, kill the Muslims. It's all the Muslims. Every single one of them. This ignorance. And now this white guy does this. He was upset. It's okay.
Well, that's to be expected, most definitely. I mean, the white man said kill the red man. The red man doesn't really do anything. I mean, you know, it's you know, people always cloak it in different causes. You know, it's a race war. It's a political war. It's always something. I mean, it's and as far as the guy saying something about Nietzsche and everything, using that as an excuse, I think it's crap.
I know. I was like, please, one of these things is not like the other.
Most definitely. I mean, the guy isn't reading into what he's talking about because, you know, the people, you know, Nietzsche was a very, you know,
he was a deep man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but I mean, people in general, man, I mean, they're just using anything and everything they can, you know, just to justify something. I mean, it's just crap. In the end, it doesn't really get anybody anywhere. And I think basically history has proven, you know, we've had the KKK, we've had, you know, Black Panthers, and I mean, any kind of nationalistic group or any, whatever. And I mean, even though they feel they're right to their own cause, they may not be right to other people, but that doesn't really invalidate, in my opinion, you know, their cause, because we don't, I'm a white man, I'm a young white male, I don't know what it's like to be black.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, who am I to say that they're wrong or somebody's wrong to feel the way they feel about something, you know? But again, you know.
You're saying let's not judge. Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much. I mean, people are just getting too worked up over all this, and you know,
it's something else out there right now. The climate is out of control.
Most definitely. I mean, you know, people should just use their brain. You know, look at. I mean, you don't have to. You know, the guy's saying, you know, oh, well, you know, as Americans, we're taking everything that's handed to us. It's like, no, you choose what you take. You know, you can choose to, you know, if you don't believe that the news is telling you the truth, you don't have to take it as the truth. You can do your research. You can, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There are other avenues out there. You know, you don't just have to take what you have. It's everybody's responsibility to do what they want to do and have their own opinion and formulate it for themselves, you know. And I mean, it's, you know, that's basically what I'm saying.
Okay. Well, Mike, thanks for calling Night Call. I sure appreciate your call calling from Brighton tonight.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good rest of your, well, now it's morning and rest of your week. And we're going now to South Lyon. Tim's on the phone.
I did it. I'm on.
Tim, you're on. I know this guy. I have to confess.
Full disclosure. You sound great, Julian. You sound fantastic.
Oh, thank you, Peter. Or Peter, Tim. Why did I say that? That was weird.
Calling Dr. Freud.
Hey, listen, the Freud is in the house, but Tim is actually, we're in a band together.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've never called. I've all these years growing up in Detroit and listening to Peter and then listening to you, I've never called in, but I'm just so inspired to call in. And all these years, I got to say, and this is going to sound like buttering up to the listenership, but the Night Call listeners are the most intelligent group of people. You never hear disagreements, and Peter disagrees, and Peter cuts people off, or you disagree, but the intelligence of people that call in, it's awesome. Coming home late on a Sunday, and it's all smart people.
You're funny, Jim.
It's true. And they're all Michiganders and Detroiters.
Are you being serious? Because I never know whether to take you serious or not. Because
no,
we've had some doozy
totally
phone calls.
I hear people that talk smart. They've done research. They've read. It's cool. You don't hear this stuff in any other city. I'm serious.
Good. I hope you're being serious because we do have a large audience of very, very intelligent people.
Totally.
I just know that you're a very sarcastic person, and I've had a few doozies tonight.
No. I'm being totally sarcastic.
There's to you, Night Call audience.
That being said, I want to ask the listenership of Night Call, and I want to ask you, especially after the caller before last, when is it time for revolution? When is it time? When is it time to fly planes into buildings?
Well, apparently this week it was.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's what I'm saying. You guys are talking about the climate on the streets and in the media. When is enough enough? When is our elected officials so? When is the differential so far? I look at these people that are in office, and I can't relate to any of them. They come from generations of money and trust funds.
Yes.
They're so. When is it time? When do we say, wait a second, we're not being represented? I get it. I get the republic. I get the democracy. I get the electorate. I understand it. But at what point do we say, I mean, there's allowances in our Constitution for these checks. That's why we're allowed to bear arms. We're allowed to form militias. And the revolutionists, these Americans that had made their way on boats and set up shop here on this new land, they were terrorists, Julian. They were terrorists. They caused collateral damage to the monarchy. Mm-hmm. They were terrorists.
That's right.
When is it time? And I want to know, I have this discussion with people, when is it time? When is it time to fly planes into buildings? When is it time to blow up gas stations? When is it time? When is it time to march on the town halls and the county seats?
I think the marching's the better idea. I mean, you know, I know people who are, let's not go there, but people who are in trouble for things like that.
Yeah.
You don't want to go to jail.
No, nobody wants to go to jail. Nobody wants to see anybody hurt. But as a 30 something, and I tell you, you get a person of average to above average intelligence. You know the book that material that guy in Texas talks about. Peter, I heard Peter talking about that almost two decades ago. He interviewed the guy that wrote that "Don't Pay Your Taxes" manifesto.
Oh yeah,
Peter had him on the air.
Yeah, I know
I the book.
I know who you're talking about. Absolutely.
I know, and I ordered the book and I got into it. And my friend, one of my best friends, is a CPA in Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
By the grace of God, he didn't have an appointment in that IRS building that week.
Ooh.
But I first turned him on to this. I said, here's this crazy book. You don't have to pay taxes. Good news. And he's like, listen.
Don't do it.
Take that route. Yeah.
Don't do it. But I know people who are currently not paying taxes. None of them who live in this state, but I have people I know out in California, West Coast, who don't pay them.
And I'll just tell you, I'll just end with this. And because you do know me and because we are the best of friends.
Yeah.
I read that guy's letter. I copied it before the FBI pulled it.
Uh-huh.
And, Julian, you know, I've felt that guy's pain as an independent contractor.
I know.
I've felt his insanity many times in my life.
But you're not going to fly a plane into a building, Tim.
I know I'm not.
That's the difference.
I know.
All right.
But, of course he's not a hero. But,
no.
Pete's, man, I mean, you know, when is it time? And I hope you guys get some calls. I hope you get some calls of people that have an answer. Like, when is it time to sort of, for the people to the government?
We say it every week here. All right, Tim, I also have to say to the audience, anyone who's heard my music, Tim and I co-wrote Baghdad and Beyond. Which is
a great song.
I mean, if we may pat ourselves on the back. All right, Tim. Tim, it was good to talk to you.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you soon. All right. And a couple open lines if you want to get in. We're going to take one more phone call, and then we'll take a very quick break, then back for more of your phone calls. Let's see. It looks like Nina in Warren's been hanging on an awfully long time. I apologize for that. Hi, Nina.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing just fine.
First, I'm calling in, so...
Oh, well, welcome.
I'm kind of listening. I wanted to talk about the smoking ban.
Sure.
Here's my thing. I used to be a smoker.
Yep.
I quit about 7 months ago.
Oh, good for you.
So, my thing is, I completely agree with you and everybody else on the no smoking in the restaurants. You know, I don't want to smell that when I'm eating my food.
Yeah.
You know, and I've got two kids, so I don't want them around it all the time, you know, people smoking and eating at the same time. My thing is, though, like, my fiance, he is a smoker, and, you know, we go out once or twice a week to the bars. I don't understand why they're banning in bars. I think that should be up to the bar owners.
Yep, that's what we had a couple of phone calls like that tonight, and that's a very common sentiment.
Because, well, and you can go outside or whatever, but, you know, here's my thing. Not all the bars that I've been to, you know, have outdoor patios, especially during the wintertime. They're not all heated. They're, you know, it's cold outside, and we're out there freezing.
I know, but you just got to smoke fast and run back in.
Well, and not only that, but, you know, if they don't have an outdoor patio, you can't take your beer with you outside the bar.
You know, in fact, Tim, who we were just talking to, he and I were at the same Magic Bag show. You put your little drink right there, you run out, you do, and they don't have a patio out there. And I have to tell you, we kind of like bonded with other people, saw people I hadn't seen for a long time. It's not going to be that bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it should be up to the establishment. You know, like I said, I understand it in the restaurants around food.
Yeah, it's gross. Yeah, it's,
you know, but I just think the bars, you know, our economy is suffering so much as it is.
Yeah.
I think the bars are going to lose so much money because people aren't going to, you know, the people who are heavy smokers, you know, they've tried to do everything to get people to quit. It's not stopping anybody. You know, even when cigarettes were $7 for a pack, it's not.
Well, so it's still not going to stop them, and you know they'll be back.
I'm not gonna stop them. I just think it's gonna cause, you know, like I've been a waitress too,
yeah,
a bartender, and you know, if people can't smoke, you lose money, you lose tips, you lose, you know, and that's gonna be a lot of money lost for some of the bars around.
Yeah, well, initially it will hurt some bars for sure, which is horrible. I hate that part of it, but I think some of the studies that I've read, it's 3 or 4 months things will kind of even itself out. So let's hope for that. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can really hope and see.
Yeah. All right, Nina. Thanks for calling from Warren. Thanks for calling. First time. Lots of first time callers. What is it about when I'm on the air? First time callers. I don't know what it is, but I like it. We'll be right back to take your calls. We have Bob, Dominic, Robert, Bruce hanging on the line and a couple of open lines. 313-298-WRIF.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Do you know someone who always seems well-connected? Here's your chance to one-up that person and then some. Welcome to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, your online connection to half-off or more deals from tons of Metro Detroit businesses. Simply log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com for special online coupons and discounts you can't get anywhere else. This week's featured deals are Laser Skin and Hair Clinics in Taylor and A1 Towing and Scrapping LLC in Livonia. All you have to do is visit MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. You'll save time and money by shopping from the comfort of your computer. Heck, you don't even have to get dressed. No shirt, no shoes, no problem.
Shot naked, man. Yeah!
Dressed or not, just go to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and you'll be connected to these incredible deals and more. MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, man. Hey, like, this chair is really cold.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
It all starts with having a good, pre-screened group of contractors to choose from. And Hire It Done is your one-stop guide to finding the one that's right for your home improvement project. Hi, I'm Adam Helfman, host of WRIF's Hire It Done. Before you start your day's home improvement tasks around your house, grab a cup of hot coffee and tune us in Saturday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Join us this weekend. Bed bugs are the fastest growing nuisance pest in the world. These little hitchhikers travel well from place to place on people, luggage, furniture, pets, you name it. Once in your home, they're difficult to eliminate. We'll give you tips on how to put these little guys to rest. Spring is about to, well, spring. We'll help you get your home improvement projects off on the right foot. Hire It Done's money-saving tip of the week, plus I'll take your house calls live all this Saturday beginning at 7 a.m. on Hire It Done at 101 WRIF, The Riff.
Is your credit card debt out of control and you don't know what to do? I'm Ted Brower, founder of Debt Settlement USA. Contrary to what you may hear from other advertisers, there is no secret program that can magically eliminate your debt. But Debt Settlement USA does have an answer. We have perhaps the most experienced team in the industry. We've negotiated and settled over $150 million of debt for people just like you. If you have over $12,000 of credit card debt, call right now for a free consultation. Debt Settlement USA built its reputation on one simple fact. We help our clients cut their debt. Find out how we can help you reduce your balances and your monthly payments.
Call Debt Settlement USA at 1-877-560-8877. If you're having trouble with credit card debt, call right now. Call 1-877-560-8877. That's 1-877-560-8877.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Riff.
This is your Travel Minute. If you're planning a flight for business or pleasure anytime soon, here's the 3-1-1 rule for carry-on luggage to ease your way through airport security lines. Rule 1. Only 3-ounce or smaller containers of liquid or gel are permitted in carry-on luggage. However, larger containers are permitted in your check-in baggage. 2. Place your 3-ounce or smaller containers into 1 1-quart size clear plastic zip-top bag. Only one bag per traveler is allowed. 3. Place the bag into the security bin with your shoes and other items as required for scanning. The rules for other personal items vary, so it's a good idea to check with your airline or travel agent before you pack for your trip.
Your Travel Minute is a public service by this station and ASTA, the American Society of Travel Agents.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
And it's just Julie, because Peter is out of the country. And I asked you to go to his website by Wednesday because he's going to post a picture of where he's been. And he wants you to guess. PeterWerbe.com. That's W-E-R-B-E.com. And if you guess it right, and I think it's the first person to guess it right because I don't know how many prizes he brought back, you will win a prize from Peter Werbe and the Night Call Show. So good luck with that. Someone wrote in, someone called in earlier and said Yugoslavia, I think, and then someone else called in, and I thought this was a great guess. And I'm not saying yes or no on anything, but they said, I bet he's in Haiti. So a very good guess at that. But you will find out next Sunday. I will be doing an interview, a half-hour interview with Peter for after the show, talking all about where he's been and what he's done, what he's learned. And as well, we'll be talking about it for sure during the show as we reunite here in the Riff Studios next Sunday night at 11 o'clock, and we hope that you will be here. Okay, so we have one more segment here left on the show, and we're going to go right down the line. We do have an open line, 313-298-WRIF. Reintroducing the topics, Kwame, the IRS, is he a terrorist? Is he not a terrorist? The guy who, the Texas suicide flyer, as they're calling him, not a domestic terrorist in the media's mind, apparently. In my mind, he is. And I get what people are saying about the hero thing, but I'm not putting him there. I can't bring myself to do that. But we'll go to Clinton, or let's go to Farmington, actually. I was thinking Clinton Township. It's Bruce who wants to talk about Clinton. I'm assuming you're talking about Hillary.
No, I'm talking about, I think I heard you, I just turned the radio on, and I heard you say that Clinton cut out some of the mental institutions here in Michigan.
Yeah, all in the whole country.
Oh, was that okay? Because I know Engler cut them out.
Oh, he beat him to it, probably.
Way back before Clinton was around, you know.
Yeah, if anything was left, now it's gone.
Is that right? Okay, I'm sorry to hear that.
I know, it's terribly sad because this is now where these people end up in the streets.
Right, and they're, you know, it's like they're helpless, you know.
They really are.
Yeah.
They really are. I mean, there are some resources for them, but really for the sheer numbers of homeless people, let's just talk right here in Detroit, there are not enough.
Right. And then some people that, you know, that are, you know, they lost their jobs and they're not mentally ill and they're just down on their luck or, you know, just bad times right now. But for a lot of people that are mentally ill and, you know, they're not straight mental, you know, they're just like, you know, the children or whatever, you know. I mean, they're adults and everything, but they just can't
function normally in society.
Right. And so those people have to be, screwed over, like, just homeless. You know, that's sad.
It is. It's terrible. It is a shame. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely shameful.
Yeah. Well, that's all I need to say.
Well, Bruce, you're a guy with a heart. I appreciate your call.
Well, thanks for the time there.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Yes. Yeah. Call again, please do. 313-298-WRIF, the number. And we go now back to Brighton. We've had a few calls from Brighton. It's hopping out there. And it's Robert. Hi, Robert.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm fine. What's going on?
Nothing much. Just chilling, relaxing, drinking a beer after work.
Having a little brewski, right on. Listening to a little Night Call. I heard it's a good. I heard it's a good combination: beer and Night Call.
Yes, it's a great combination. this is my first time actually calling in too.
Great. Welcome.
I was just hearing about like this. It's not like a conspiracy thing, like. I don't know what the other guy was saying before about conspiracies. It's like you need to get the facts from things.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to...
That's what he was saying, right?
Yeah. Sorry.
It's okay.
I'm just kind of preoccupied, too.
With your beer, or with me? Come on.
All right, I'm sorry. I just wanted to call up and just tell everybody about, like, martial law.
What about it?
In the U.S., it's a very good possibility that it could happen like any time now.
I don't think we need to go that far yet.
Okay, well that's fine.
But why do you think that? Tell me why you think that. I'm going to let you go. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I don't know. They just the U.S. government has oh my gosh, I'm trying to think.
It's okay, but. Are you nervous?
My bad. They got the UN over here training, and like right next to.
I don't think, and no one needs to be worried about the UN.
No. I know that, but when they came in, and there's a thing in their training book. It's called Operation Garden Plot, and it's supposed.
Where are you reading this? Where did you get this?
The internet and via other people's information, like passed down for family and stuff too.
Okay, well, because this is all very suspect to me.
Yeah, this is way out of like the conversation that that you guys are having.
It doesn't it doesn't matter. We go all over the place on this show. It's fine that you're going out of it, but I'm a little suspect as the origins of this. In fact, I would look this up on some of those.
That's all I'm trying to like get people to do. That's why I called in, is just like look into it. Like that's all I can say, is just look into it and just like read the facts about some things. I just want
read
to
the facts about everything. But where do you get the right facts? Because there,
that is true. That
you know,
is true.
You cannot trust everything you read on the internet at all.
Robert. But it comes from like an actual like UN book, like a military book, like from that stuff. But anyway,
okay, all right. Okay, maybe you should send. Can you send an email on some of these links to calltalkyes@yahoo.com? I'd be very curious. I'll look at them.
Yeah, cool.
Okay.
Me too, and I don't know, everybody that's out there, just look up, like, Operation Garden Plot. Thanks.
Okay, Big Brother is watching us. Okay, and that I won't argue with. Paul in Plymouth, let's talk about smoking. That's what he wants to talk about. So he says, usually a lot of times people flip, they're like, they get passionate about other things we talk about, but is it smoking?
Yes.
Okay, what's on your mind? What are your thoughts, Paul?
Well, I spend a lot of my winter out in Arizona and Scottsdale.
Yeah.
And Arizona moved over to, no smoking in bars and restaurants several years ago.
And do you like it?
You know what? It is increased business. And people just adapted to it.
See?
You know, they go outside, they smoke, they come back in, they respect other people's wishes. And you got all those non-smokers. I'm a non-smoker, and I hate coming home and smelling. I mean, it's the most disgusting smell, but...
It is.
You know, all those people that don't smoke, they come out to the restaurants. They come out to the bars and have a drink. I mean, it's amazing the people that you've never seen in these places suddenly are appearing in these places. And it's increased business.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in fact, I know a lot of people who just can't handle it. When, say, my band would be playing out somewhere, in a bar somewhere, they'll be like, you know what, Julian, enjoyed your set, but man, I thought I was going to, you know, choke while I was watching it.
You know, If I could correct you on one thing about the casinos, you'd mentioned that these Indians.
American Indians, yeah, they're exempt.
Ah, but there's only one casino. This is lobbyist power that is controlling this. The only Indian.
It's a Greek town, right?
That's it.
Yeah.
But they're all exempt.
Yeah, what's up with that then?
MGM is not. They're not Indian casinos. Those are Las Vegas casinos, Potawatomis. I'm sorry?
Did you say Potawatomis?
Yeah, Potawatomis are ones who own Greek town along with Sault Ste. Marie.
Right.
And, you know, that's broke. I don't even know if that'll be around anymore.
Mm. Look into this a little bit further, hey?
Could I mention one more thing about, I listened to some of your other callers while I was on hold.
Yeah.
You know, the gentleman that was just called about the UN training in America.
Yeah.
You know, that's really happening. And we should be.
Explain it further. I don't know. I got to look into this.
Well, that's it. I would be concerned with that. Why is the UN here training in our country?
Well,
to me, that is shocking. And I'm not going to play this big brother conspiracy thing.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things going on in this country that, you know, you wonder what direction we're heading here. Why are
we allowing
people to come in here and train here?
Well, I don't even know the facts on that. So I don't know. That's something that has to be looked into. I asked him to send me some links and...
Could I go a step further?
Sure, go for it.
You know, you mentioned this gentleman who, I shouldn't call him a gentleman, he flew his plane into the IRS building.
And he was just very upset, Paul.
He was upset. I don't condone violence. I wish we could all live peacefully. But I think he made some great points. And if you look at the history of this guy, he was very sane, a very smart man who was relatively wealthy. He owned a plane.
Like my dad. And the IRS sent him over the edge.
And maybe it did.
I know. Well, you think, yeah.
If you look at Terry McVeigh.
Tim McVeigh, yeah.
And Tim McVeigh.
Yeah, and it was Terry, what was his name?
Terry Nichols.
Thank you.
From Michigan here.
Yes, how could we forget his last name?
Up in the Michigan militia thumb, you know.
Right on, yeah, uh-huh.
You know, if you listen to the reasons why he did it, for the same things that were...
That's what I said earlier.
He, you know, we had Ruby Ridge, where they went up to get this guy who they should have left alone.
Killed his whole family.
Right. Then we went over to the compound over there in Waco, and we killed all these innocent kids and a bunch of crazy religious zealots. But maybe we should have fenced them in. And he said, you know what? They killed a bunch of innocent people, and Terry McVeigh went and killed a bunch of innocent people. And, you know, I don't want this to catch on to the rest of America, but...
Exactly.
Because every time they do this, it just takes more and more rights away from us.
Thank you.
You know.
Thank you, Paul.
But does our government need to say, you know what, maybe they need to step back and go, hey, you know, economic times aren't great. We need to be a little easier on people.
But I don't think one nutty guy flying a plane into a building is going to make the difference. I think sane, rational thinking people who find other ways than that to get through to their, you know, fearless leaders, then maybe we can get a little further on this.
I agree. Yeah. It just seems like the state, when you have the state power against you or federal power against you, they are ruthless and merciless. They have no feeling.
I know. My dad also. Yeah. That IRS is a son of a bitch, Jolene. I know.
I think they get a bad rap because most of the time they're willing to work with people.
Okay, well, there you go. See, I don't know. My dad's, you know, I'll leave my dad out of this.
What pushes these people over the edge? That's what we need to ask.
Well,
what
true.
Is making these people do this? I
mean, yeah, and there was some questions of mental illness. We'll find that kind of thing out. I'll tell you what, you know, no one's more PO'd than me, okay?
Yeah, I mean,
but, you know, I have ways of letting go of that steam other than, you know, getting in a plane. But, Paul, thanks for calling. I had a bunch of phone calls I need to burn through here at the end of the show. I wish we could talk longer, but thanks a lot.
Great topics tonight.
Oh,
great
thank
topics.
You. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Yeah, I appreciate you calling Night Call here on WRIF. We are going to blow through these. We're going to go to Chris in Detroit. Chris, hi. Let's get your headlines here.
Oh, hi, Julian. I was just hoping to talk about the smoking issue a little bit.
Yeah.
I work in the food service industry. I don't work at a bar per se, but, you know, related fields. And I can tell you right now that there are two big concerns with what's going to happen regarding specifically how people will adapt to the smoking ban. Specifically, people are worried about Diamond Dashers.
Really? Oh, that they'll go out and smoke and then just leave.
Right, exactly.
Well, I can see being, I mean, I get that. But most people, when they go to a restaurant, they're honest, don't you think? They pay their bill.
Well, the restaurant, sure, but, you know, a couple college kids go out to the bar for a good time, and, you know, they're probably not above.
Okay, well, what's the other one?
The other one is that it might help inspire bar hopping, which in turn could lead to, you know, drunk driving incidents and things like that. If people can't smoke while they drink, they might decide to smoke in the car between drinks at different locations.
Oh, God. Well, let's hope not. You know, come on, people. This is 2010, and drunk driving is so passe, really. You know, come on, get with the program. That's what I say. Chris, I got to blow through, but thanks so much for calling. I appreciate it. Please do call the show again. I hate to make these so quick, but this is the way it is. We're winding down. Bob in Romulus wants to talk about that guy in Texas.
Jillian,
yes.
How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. The guy in Texas,
yeah.
You were asking why nobody's putting it in.
Calling him a domestic terrorist, yeah.
Well, he's an angry white guy.
Yes.
Why is he an angry white guy in the United States? Look at the Tea Party.
Yes, you get an instant free pass. You're right, Bob.
You know, I mean, hey, you're an angry white guy, you're allowed to be.
Yeah.
You know, and then real quick, I know because you're running out of time.
Yeah.
But you know, these people we're talking about, you know, this conspiracy that the government's going to take over and everything. People should look into the schools of America outside of Fort Benning, Georgia. Actually, it's on the Post. I don't know if you're familiar with
it. Well, I have been familiar for many years with it. You can go to soawatch.org, and right. The School of America's, they changed the name, and remember that. And it's where they're teaching mercenaries how to kill in South America. That's the basic bottom line, isn't it?
Right. I mean, what they started out is George Bush Sr.'s hit squads for South America.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he trained them for, was to go down and kill the Sandinistas in El Salvador in the 80s. And it's still going on today, maybe not as much, but, you know, I mean, the school's still open. It's still part of Fort Benning.
So we're training in the tools of terrorism. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah, every day.
Yeah.
You know, and then you never hear about, you know, all the murders that are being committed by the soldiers that are coming back. Like last summer at Fort Benning, there was several murders committed by our soldiers on innocent people because they've been trained to be killers.
Mm.
I mean, it's
scary.
A violent society, you know, and we're causing it. You know, I mean, it's just going to get worse.
Yeah, that's scary stuff, Bob.
You know, it really is. I mean, you know, you train, what, a couple hundred thousand people to go murder without thought? Hey, they're used to killing. What's going to stop them from coming back here and killing?
Ooh, strong words from Bob. Thanks for calling.
Have a good weekend, Jimmy.
Okay, you too. Have a good week. We'll talk to you next Sunday. And we do have a few phone calls we need to just get on. Josh and Warren about the smoking ban. Josh, real quick.
I just want to say I think it might create jobs because if bar owners planned ahead, they could be building outdoor patio areas.
Oh, because some construction work. We get some electrical for the heaters.
There you go.
A designer or two.
Yeah, and I also know a lot of people that don't smoke that intentionally don't go to bars just because it's, like Paul mentioned earlier, the smell when you get home.
That's awful.
And the overall atmosphere. Yeah,
I think a lot of people are going to be happy in the end. And I mean, you know, a lot of people have said, well, what about our rights? And I do understand how you feel. I have compassion, but not to the point where I'm not happy about this smoking.
I feel the same way. I actually quit about 8 months ago, and I'm excited about the no smoking.
Congratulations, Josh and Warren. Congratulations. Well, stay that way, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thanks for calling. You too. Thanks for calling the Night Call Show, 313-298-WRIF. Although we're not going to take any more phone calls after I pick these up because we're just about to wind down Peter Werby with a couple of great interviews coming up next. And we'll go to Dominic in Westland. Did I never get to you?
No.
Oh, Dominic, I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
I was actually just calling, with all the stuff that Kwame's gotten away with already.
Yeah.
How long do you think, if he actually did get convicted of all this, he would actually spend in jail?
You know, that's a really good question. And I have to say, the one that I can't answer. I had that same question myself earlier today, but I think it's going to be a while. I mean, look at what the text messages. How long was he in there? About 4 months or something like that? So this, with the bribery and the not paying, I don't know. It could be years.
Yeah, but don't you think they should be held up to like a higher standard, seeing how they're government officials?
Yes, I do. I do. And you do too, right?
I just have a weird feeling that he's going to get out.
Get out of it
earlier than what he should.
Yeah, for good behavior. Ha ha ha.
Better time served.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, we'll find out. And you know what? The good news is we don't have to. I mean, yeah, we do kind of have to live his reality a little bit because of what he created and did to our city. But you know, he's gonna pay, and we'll find out. It all comes out in the wash, as my mom always says. All right. Thanks, Dominic. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Sorry to keep you on hold so long. Sometimes it happens. Our final call of the night is Matt in Brighton. Matt, what is your topic?
Talking about the smoking ban.
Sure.
I lived in Ohio for the last, like, 5 years.
Yeah?
And they did smoking ban down there maybe, like, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And there was a whole bunch of hype about it, like there is right now.
Sure.
Here.
Yes.
And the main problem that people were complaining about was not smoking in bars. Well, after the hype wore off,
mm-hmm.
most of the smaller bars, they really don't enforce anything.
Oh, so people are still...
don't care.
People are still puffing?
Yeah, they don't care. If you go to, like, a big, fancy bar where everyone is popular with the younger people and
yeah.
everything like that, they'll care there. But if you just go to a small bar in your small hometown or out in the outskirts, they don't care at all.
Okay, so there's still people kind of skirting around it, and they're not being held to it. Well, we'll see how it goes here in Michigan. Matt, thanks for being our final caller here on Night Call Tonight.
Thank you.
Yeah, have a good one, and drive safe. Hang up and drive, okay? But I do appreciate you calling the show. Hey, it's been a pleasure. I want to thank Jade so much for handling the phone calls as she does every week and putting together the podcast that will be up by noon tomorrow at WRIF.com. Don't forget to go to PeterWerby.com, and by Wednesday, a photo of where he's been out of the country. You make your guess, you may win. Peter Werby will be back next week, and I want to thank all of you out there. You've been great. Thanks a lot.
You're listening to Nightfall with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
It all starts with having a good pre-screened group of contractors to choose from. And Hire It Done is your one-stop guide to finding the one that's right for your home improvement project. Hi, I'm Adam Helfman, host of WRIF's Hire It Done. Before you start your day's home improvement tasks around your house, grab a cup of hot coffee and tune us in Saturday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Join us this weekend. Bed bugs are the fastest growing nuisance pest in the world. These little hitchhikers travel well from place to place on people, luggage, furniture, pets, you name it. Once in your home, they're difficult to eliminate. We'll give you tips on how to put these little guys to rest. Spring is about to, well, spring. We'll help you get your home improvement projects off on the right foot. Hire It Done's money-saving tip of the week, plus I'll take your house calls live. All this Saturday, beginning at 7 a.m. on Hire It Done at 101 WRIF, The Riff.
Win big at the casino?
Nope, better than that. I just got a great deal at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Ah, yes, MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, the online connection to half off or more deals from tons of Metro Detroit businesses.
I always look there first. They're the best bet for online coupons and discounts.
This week, MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com is featuring Laser Skin and Hair Clinics in Taylor and A1 Towing and Scrapping LLC in Livonia.
Jackpot! Nobody beats MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Deal yourself a winning hand. Save time and money by shopping from the comfort of your own home when you connect to amazing deals like these and more at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-493-8159. Now you have called qualified help in dealing with the IRS. This is the second chance you never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. Call right now for your second chance. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159.
Detroit's Rock Station 101. The Riff.
My mom is my hero. She goes into burning buildings. She finds people inside who need to be saved. She helps them get out, even when she can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My mom is a firefighter, but the best thing she can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
101.1 WRIF.
The Riff.
Hey, this is Lars from Metallica.
The Riff. Hello, this is Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
The Riff.
Hello, this is Brian Johnson of AC/DC. You're listening to Detroit's home of rock and roll, WRIF.
Everything rocks.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. In the phone-in talk shows that I do, here in an area that we talk about, we at least used to talk about as the Motor City, a labor center of the United States, the home of the UAW, that many young people and even people older say, well, the unions were okay for my father, the unions were okay for my grandfather even, and unions as the core mechanism for defending working people's rights, I don't think is in the general consciousness anymore.
Well, do you want a wireless laptop but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronics Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronics is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
Strategist, labor educator, and lawyer. He recently retired from his job as national staff member of the Communications Workers of America, and he's had articles, reviews, and op-ed pieces in The Nation, New Politics, Counterpunch, Los Angeles Times, even The Wall Street Journal, and The New York Times. Steve Early, we reach him in his office in Boston. Welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Well, thanks for having me on, Peter.
Well, there's so much just in the title. I love that because that's always a good place to start. Embedded, that phrase came into being at the time of the Iraq War, the latest one, where there were reporters who were embedded with units, and the idea that there was a critical sense that they were too close to their subject. So you're embedded with organized labor. Tell us what you mean in the title, but also what does that give you in terms of a perspective, and can you have a critical distance?
Well, I try to. I've been an activist in the labor movement for the last 35 years, most of that time spent as a national staff member, organizer, and field rep for the Communication Workers of America. But during all the years that I was doing day-to-day union work, helping members with their grievances and helping local unions negotiate contracts and working on strikes and organizing campaigns, I also tried to do as much freelance writing as I could about labor-related topics. So I guess you could call me a participatory labor journalist. Labor journalism in the mainstream media is a dwindling field, but I tried to keep alive the tradition of being a participant observer and writing about the movements and activities of the labor movement that I was involved in. And this new book is a collection of that work.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in terms of critical distance, I think we'll find as we continue with our interview with Steve Early that he does have criticisms of the current labor movement. But let's save that just for a while. Let's go to the positive. You heard me as I introduced you that there are many people of a lot of times people of this generation, the younger generation, but also older people who say, well, unions were good. Sure, they gave us the weekend. Sure, they gave us any number of benefits. And they were active during the 30s and the 40s, and they set the context for what we have now. But now, you know, they're bureaucratic. They don't do the jobs they're supposed to. And I can do better as an individual. Steve Early, how do you respond to that?
Well, I think that is a familiar mantra, but it's one that has definitely been running out of steam lately due to the economic downturn of the last 6 to 12 months. I mean, we've seen millions of people laid off from their jobs, forced to work shorter work weeks. Many people have taken pay cuts. They're on furlough. Their pay has been frozen. They've lost their job-based health insurance coverage or are paying much more for their medical benefits as a result of employer-initiated health care cost shifting. And most seriously of all, for those of us near retirement age, people's retirement savings have been badly eroded due to the elimination of traditional group pension coverage and its replacement by the pretty disastrous experiment with individual retirement accounts, 401ks and IRAs, whose value has been vaporized by the collapse of the market. All of these negative workplace trends add up to a very good reason for people to have a voice at work.
Have union members fared better in this period?
Well, the big difference, and you can see it in the auto industry, where the results are still quite painful, when workers have collective bargaining rights, when they have the right to negotiate about changes in their wages, hours, and working conditions, that's an important tool. Traditionally, as you pointed out, to make gains, to make advances, to raise wage levels and improve the standard of living. But even in a downturn, when the bargaining is defensive, it's better to have a voice than not have a voice. And if you're going to take backward steps, you want them to be negotiated. You don't want them to be unilaterally imposed by the employers. And that is the fate of the close to 90% of the American workforce that doesn't have collective bargaining rights today.
How did things get to this point? What was the high point of union membership in the private sector, let's say? And it's pretty low now, isn't it?
Yes. The high point of unionization was in the early 1950s, about 33%, definitely reflecting the wave of mass organizing in industries like auto and steel and trucking and rubber manufacturing, in tire manufacturing, the big Midwestern basic industries. Since that 1953 peak, there has been a steady decline in unionization in the private sector. It's down to near 7%. The numbers have been bucked up a bit by the growth of unions in the public sector, in government employment. But overall, only about 12% of American workers are currently represented by unions.
And what happened? Part of it is, of course, people say that unions got fat and bureaucratic. Many of them became corrupt, that they didn't represent their workers, that there was just careerism, if you use a phrase from the 1920s, that these unions became run by pork choppers. I love that phrase. In other words, men usually that were in it only for the pork chops for themselves, and it became emblematic of the most emblematic would be the Teamsters at its worst.
Well, definitely some of the flaws in union organizations themselves have contributed to the decline. But I think they're really secondary factors, as serious as they are in those unions which have had, and in some cases continue to have, problems with internal corruption and lack of democracy and other abuses of membership rights. There's no better example of the global forces that have been undermining unionization and good union jobs than what's happened to Detroit. The decline of manufacturing, the outsourcing of jobs, conversion of many good-paying full-time jobs into part-time jobs, people being reclassified as independent contractors, the whole shift from manufacturing to the service sector. There's a number of larger economic forces which have worked against the labor movement and undermined its past gains. But I think to recover, to go on the offensive, we need a program both of internal revitalization to address some of the problems within unions that you just mentioned, and we need to build stronger alliances with other forces in society that have also been adversely affected by these workplace trends.
My guest is Steve Early on the Peter Werbe Show. His book is Embedded with Organized Labor, Journalistic Reflections on the Class War at Home. He's both a labor journalist, an attorney, and a labor organizer himself, recently retired. And you can go to monthlyreview.org. Monthly Review Press is who published it, and an excellent source of material. And there'll also be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. One of the things, I always say this just to kind of throw people for a loop. Usually if you ask people, what's the function of a labor union, they'll say, well, to defend working people. But I carried a little bit further and to say, and this is maybe a little too abstract, but still I think it's accurate, that unions defend the average selling price of labor. But when you talk about a free market, we would still all, probably the highest wage in the United States for a working person would be about $3 an hour if it had to go on the global market. And well, let me put it this way, even the domestic market, let alone now in a globalized market, that probably wages would on the free market would be very, very low. So unions kick up the price, and well that they should, because we deserve to be compensated as well as possible within, you know, financial integrity of an enterprise. But given the globalization, given the fact now that you buy a Ford product and you think, oh, I just bought a union car, right? And you bought a Fusion, and you didn't. It was made in Hermosillo, Mexico, for guys making $2.50 an hour. So it worries me that given the globalization of labor and capital, that it's going to be a tough road to hoe.
Very definitely. And one of the challenges that some unions have begun to meet better than others is building cross-border alliances with workers' organizations in Canada, in Mexico, in the rest of Central America and South America, Asia, and Western Europe, so that when they're dealing with common employers, they can plot strategy together, conduct joint campaigns, coordinate their activities, because otherwise powerful multinational companies, which really owe their allegiance to no national flag or nation state, will pit the workers of one country against another.
Well, I don't know if the United Auto Workers, who I used to work for, more full disclosure, if they still call themselves, I should know this, the International United Auto Workers, and they did that because they had locals in Canada, but which left quite a while ago to form the Canadian Auto Workers. But I never quite understood why the UAW didn't take up unionization even directly in Mexico with Mexican organizers in, like, the Ford plants, the GM plants, and what have you.
Well, I think at the official level, there has been some outreach on the part of the UAW. Some of the cross-border networking, some of the best cross-border networking has been done by unofficial groups, Detroit-based organization known as Labor Notes, which conducts educational conferences and puts out a monthly newsletter for the last 30 years for labor activists, has sponsored conferences every 2 years in Dearborn, Forum, which has brought together trade unionists from throughout the world. And Labor Notes has been very active in establishing ties with similar or labor groups in other countries and promoting cross-border activity at the rank-and-file level so that we're not simply working through the bureaucracies of national unions here and in other countries to get done what needs to be done to confront the employers and the common challenge of globalization.
Labor Notes is good, and those conferences are key for people interested in the labor movement, whether you're in a union or not. And I'm trying to remember whether they had one last year or was it the year before?
It was last April, and the next one is coming up in the spring of 2010.
Yeah, it'll be right around the Detroit area. As usual, are the labor organizations now, the unions, up to the task that's confronting labor, but also, and we should expand on this, all working people, because people often think that their union, they're the elite, they're special, they don't, they're the privileged. I don't, and there's often even this resentment attendant. But does the unions now, as they're constituted, have the stuff to do what needs to be done?
Well, I think one area where the labor movement definitely needs to project itself and position itself as a defender of all workers and can do that is in the current struggle for some kind of meaningful health care reform. Our system of job-based medical coverage, often provided through private for-profit health insurance companies, is falling apart. It's definitely failing the millions of people who've lost their jobs and are now, in many cases, without coverage. In Washington, the labor movement is trying to be a part of a coalition to enact real health care reform. And this would benefit not only the workers who have the right to bargain about their medical benefits, but the millions who have no say and the millions more who have no coverage whatsoever.
Well, labor put an amazing amount of money into the election of Barack Obama and expected, as labor often does when it backs Democratic Party candidates, that they're going to get a big return. Usually, they get very little back, sometimes none, nothing. And so far, given the extent of the effort of the UAW, for instance, in Ohio and Pennsylvania, is Barack Obama doing what he could or should for labor?
I think he definitely needs to feel a lot more heat from the rank and file. The Democrats, I would agree, are always a disappointment waiting to happen where labor issues are concerned. And you can see the powerful forces on the other side of the health care reform debate already watering down the proposals of the administration and the Democratic leadership in Congress. The wing of the labor movement, which supports a single-payer solution, would like to see enacted in this country a Canadian-style Medicare for All program, which I think is the only real solution to the health care crisis, has continued to be quite active and tried to keep that perspective part of the debate. On the other side, we have employers, insurance companies, the doctors' association, the pharmaceutical industry, and many conservatives in both major parties who are looking, I think, instead to patch band-aids onto the existing system and not really engineer any fundamental change.
I don't get it, though, why Ron Gettelfinger, the president of the United Auto Workers and the president of General Motors, don't have their arms linked, singing Solidarity Forever, demanding a universal single-payer health care system. That would take so much off of particularly big employers. Why aren't the big employers more for a government health program?
Well, in my experience, trying as a union rep to challenge employers, both large and small, to join the labor movement in lobbying for real national health insurance, to get this issue off the bargaining table, to eliminate it as a cost burden for employers directly, many are reluctant to do it. Some have signed on to joint health care reform activity, but I think it's an ideological problem. They do not want to see the social wage expanded. They don't want to see another big social insurance program launched, even though it would be good for their own individual bottom line.
Yeah, I don't get it. I think you're right. I think it's just reflexive that, pardon me, that, you know, it's that phrase that came about, I guess it was in the late 40s, socialized medicine. Although I don't think that's such a bad word to anybody under 50 anymore. Socialized, socialism, of course, put up images of the Soviet Union and repressive government intervening in every aspect of our life. And all of a sudden, a film like Sicko comes out about the health industry here and abroad by Michael Moore, and suddenly you say, well, gee, every other country has a system where the government is the single payer or some variant of that, and it works out real well, and it takes enormous cost off the individual and employers.
I would agree. I spent some time as a union rep with CWA members in Eastern Canada, and it makes a tremendous difference in terms of union contract negotiations to not have to be spending so much time and energy wrangling over who's going to pay what for what kind of benefit coverage. There is no solution to the problem of medical cost inflation at any one bargaining table, at any one company, in any one industry. And in Canada, people have cradle-to-the-grave health security. Sure, there are problems with the system, depending on the level of funding and which province you live in. But people know that even if they're laid off, if they're forced into early retirement, if they get sick and lose their job, they're going to be covered. And the health care is accessible. It's affordable. It's everything that it's not in this country because it's tied to people's jobs for the most part. And the private insurance companies, rake 30% off of every dollar that we spend and waste it on their own profits, marketing, administrative costs, and other forms of overhead that are absolutely unnecessary and would be eliminated in a single-payer system.
Mm-hmm. The book is Embedded with Organized Labor, Journalistic Reflections on the Class War at Home. Pardon me. Steve Early is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. Boy, I cannot kick this springtime cold. I'm doing everything I can not to to cough, but Steve Early has a few more minutes with us, so I think I can get through that. Maybe the single biggest priority of the organized labor movement is the Employee Free Choice Act, which is called EFCA, E-F-C-A, and it would change the rules for how you can organize in a workplace. It was essentially a card checkoff system where you get over 50% and then you can have a union. This was agreed by the Democrats and by Barack Obama to also take this up as a number one priority, but it's right now, I don't think its chances look good. Do you?
Well, there have definitely been some instances of waffling within the Senate, where we're first faced with the problem of having to have a supermajority, 60 votes to cut off any Republican filibuster, which is what killed the last major bid for labor law reform 30 years ago. The labor movement is doing a much better job than it did then, mobilizing members to keep the pressure on the Democrats and on the administration to bring this to a vote and to get these long overdue changes in federal labor law enacted. It is really very disappointing that in the midst of an economic crisis like this, where workers clearly need a strengthened tool for raising their wages, for improving their living standards, that so many Democrats are now acting like this is not a good time. We can't afford to strengthen workers' rights to organize and bargain during this bad economy, when the bad economy is the number one reason why we need to strengthen workers' rights.
Well, I was going to say, that's the employer's argument. The United States Chamber of Commerce, now led by ex-Governor Engler of Michigan, says exactly that. I mean, you're trying to get wages boosted at a time when companies are hurting. That could just make the recession worse.
Well, they made the same argument in the depths of the Great Depression when the law that we're trying to amend now, the National Labor Relations Act or the Wagner Act, was first enacted. The employers made the same argument in the 1930s against federal support for collective bargaining, against the minimum wage, against child labor protection, against the creation of Social Security, the eight-hour day. All of these protective labor measures that were enacted as part of the New Deal were all supposedly going going to wreak havoc in the economy, destroy jobs, and reduce everyone to poverty. And in fact, those all prove to be important means of uplifting the working class at a time when it was suffering due to economic conditions not unlike those we're facing today.
Mm-hmm. We've just got a couple minutes left with Steve Early. You said the phrase working class. That seems like something from the 1930s. Usually now even the AFL talks about working families. Certainly the subtitle of your book, Embedded with Organized Labor, Journalistic Reflections on the Class War at Home. That too, people could say, wow, that sounds too rad, or that's 1930s talk. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think the reality is that the vast majority of people in this country, however they may think of themselves, are white-collar or blue-collar workers. They work for a salary or a wage. If they had any substantial savings in their retirement fund or equity in their homes, for many people, the value out of it has been greatly reduced. People are, in fact, part of a working-class majority. It may not, in many instances, look like the traditional working class of blue-collar manufacturing and in the Detroit of yore, but in terms of relationship to the means of production, relationship to those on the other side of the class divide who own and control the wealth of the country, the vast majority of us are relatively disenfranchised economically, and unless we get our act together politically, that condition is only going to worsen.
Well, class war, that doesn't sound peaceful at all. That sounds like something with workers fighting the cops and scabs in the streets of the 1930s.
Well, the war, for the most part, is a one-sided one being waged on workers and their families by the other side, by management, by the corporations. And you can see the effect of that in the steadily deteriorating job conditions, pay, benefits, and job security of millions of people.
Well, I guess one unanswered question, and I probably didn't pose it strong enough, are the current labor formations up to the task that you see of what's ahead for working people throughout the country, both in unions and inside unions and outside?
Well, in Washington at the moment, there is an attempt to get the two major labor federations, the AFL-CIO and Change to Win Coalition, which was created 4 years ago, and a third group, the National Association, National Education Association, the largest teachers union, together as part of a coalition, a labor unity group that would lobby more effectively with the Congress and the Obama administration. I think that's fine, but what we really need in the labor movement is much more kind of bottom-up revitalization, much more membership participation, much more of a role for the rank and file, and that's really been the mission of groups like Labor Notes, based in Detroit, to try to promote that kind of bottom-up transformation of unions that would make them more effective defenders of their members and the interests of the community.
Mm-hmm. And you get a nice endorsement on the back of your book from Jane Slaughter from Labor Notes. She says, Steve Early says things other people in labor would like to say but don't because of protocol, fear of firing, or if truth be told, fear of afflicting the comfortable. And this is a book, whether you're in a union or not, that gives you an idea what needs to be done if we're not all just to thatch our roofs. I don't think we want to do that. Embedded with Organized Labor is the book. The subtitle is Journalistic Reflections on the Class War at Home. Steve Early has been my guest. It's published by Monthly Review Press. You go to monthlyreview.org or my website, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E. Steve Early, thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Join 101 The Riff live at Autoramo this weekend at Cobo Center. It's all starting this Friday with Meltdown and Sarah the Riff Rock Girl, broadcasting live from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Stop by the Riff booth and check out the Riff Lounge, furnished by LeBaron's Billiards and Game Room Supply, complete with a cash bar, pool table, foosball table, and golden tee. Check out LeBaron'sBilliards.com or stop in LeBaron's and mention Riff Radio or Autorama and receive additional savings on your purchase.
It all starts with having a good pre-screened group of contractors to choose from. And Hire It Done is your one-stop guide to finding the one that's right for your home improvement project. Hi, I'm Adam Helfman, host of WRIF's Hire It Done. Before you start your day's home improvement tasks around your house, grab a cup of hot coffee and tune us in Saturday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Join us this weekend. Bed bugs are the fastest growing nuisance pest in the world. These little hitchhikers travel well from place to place on people, luggage, furniture, pets, you name it. Once in your home, they're difficult to eliminate. We'll give you tips on how to put these little guys to rest. Spring is about to, well, spring. We'll help you get your home improvement projects off on the right foot. Hire It Done's money-saving tip of the week. Plus, I'll take your house calls live all this Saturday beginning at 7 a.m. on Hire It Done at 101 WRIF, The Rip.
Are you struggling with too much credit card debt, sky-high interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees? Having trouble just making the monthly minimums? We can help. We're Credit Card Relief. We've helped thousands of people become debt-free in months instead of years, all while saving thousands of dollars and without risking your family home. No, this isn't bankruptcy. It isn't one of those credit counseling deals or a high-interest consolidation loan. We're Credit Card Relief. We've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're an attorney-driven program with an outstanding record of performance and client satisfaction. If you're serious about getting out of debt, call Credit Card Relief right now. Don't wait for the collection calls to start. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Is this on? Thank you. All right. Good morning, students. This is your principal speaking. Please listen closely to the following schedule changes. First period will be replaced by sleeping in. If second period will be replaced by warm weather. If third period will be replaced by belly flops. Fourth period will be replaced by goofing around. Fifth period will be replaced by batting leadoff. But there will be no changes to lunch. It will be in session every day.
School may be out for summer, but lunch is always in session. If your kids rely on subsidized school meals, call Gleaners Community Food Bank of Southeastern Michigan at 1-866-GLEANER or visit feedingamerica.org/summermeals.
A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. Well, one of the things you must know, dear listeners, that I depend on is the right to free speech encoded in our foundation document in the First Amendment to the Constitution, the right that Congress shall make no law abridging freedom of speech, and a lot of other things as well. There's also an adjunct of that that has to do with privacy, the right to be free from government intervention into our private lives. And given the modern world and technology and what have you, that's getting to be more and more of a joke. Or let me put it another way, more and more of a threatened concept. Of course, it's never really been steadfastly adhered to by governments. Governments don't like it when they don't know what their citizenry is doing. So we've had to really struggle throughout our history as a nation. But it goes back even farther than that. Joining me for this segment of the Peter Werby Show is Frederick S. Lane. He's written American Privacy, the 400-year history of our most contested right. He's an author, an attorney, a freelance journalist, an expert witness, and professional speaker who focuses on the impact of emerging technologies on American society. The book is published by Beacon, and we welcome Frederick Lane. He is in Chicago right now. Welcome to the broadcast.
Oh, thank you very much, Peter. It's nice to be here.
400 years ago, the subtitle is The 400-Year History of Our Most Contested Right. Is 1610, is that any significant date, or is this just a ballpark in terms of four centuries?
I think that's a fair way to put it. It's definitely a ballpark. And the point of it was really to underscore for people that the issues that we are wrestling with really predate the foundation of our country. And I think that that's actually an important point for people to remember, that the colonists had their own privacy concerns, both in terms of coming to North America as pilgrims and then in their dealings with the British Crown.
Yeah, I sort of focused, I was too self-focused. I was talking about the right of free speech. That means that you have the right to talk without the government intervening. But there's all sorts of other aspects of privacy, that we have the right to assemble, that we have the right to publish, aspects like that, that were free from government intervention. Or am I mean, do you include privacy in all that?
I absolutely do. As a matter of fact, I think you've put your finger on it very nicely, because when you really start to examine the concept of a right to privacy, I think one of the things that's interesting about it is that the Founding Fathers never used the word privacy in any of the documents that form the structure of our government. You can read through the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, and you won't find privacy in any of those documents. But part of the reason for that is that much of what we consider to be privacy or privacy-related issues, I think, was largely assumed by the founders. And for them, the focus of their concern was on what control individuals had over their lives vis-a-vis the government. And so when you look at the individual amendments, which is something that the Supreme Court did in the 1960s, you see that the general purpose of most of the amendments is to create a degree of distance, if you will, between citizens and the government, so that citizens are free to live their lives with a minimal amount of interference. You've referenced freedom of speech, which obviously is the ability to have private opinions and to express them without being told you can't do that. Other obvious ones are the Fifth Amendment, which is your right to remain silent, sort of the opposite of the freedom of speech. But the government can't compel you to give up information against yourself, things that you would want to keep private. You don't have to quarter troops without, you know, basically a declaration of war. You've got freedom from search and seizure, which is the big one under the Fourth Amendment, which says that the government can't come into your home and search your papers or your, you know, holdings without probable cause and a specific reason for doing so. So there's a very clear intent on the part of the framers when they did the Bill of Rights to protect those aspects of our lives that we would assume to be private.
Well, there was the Magna Carta in the 13th century that laid out some of the rights of the people, at least the nobles that forced King John to sign that document. And still, it was done more. I mean, it was very with all the rights guaranteed. The British Crown certainly didn't pay much heed to what King John had promised. Yet it remained in English jurisprudence and consciousness. So, I mean, this is an extraordinary break with history, that is the American Constitution, that went what preceded it. I mean, there is a body of English law, but to codify the rights of man, if you will, as it was called then, was extraordinary, wasn't it?
It really was. I mean, it was revolutionary in every sense of the word, what they were doing. And the fact, I mean, you have to understand that the Bill of Rights itself was a near thing, because there were many people very well-meaning and I think very intelligent who were concerned that if you delineated specific rights in the Bill of Rights, that you would essentially be ceding to the government all of the ones that you forgot to mention. And so there continues to be a great deal of debate over that. Obviously, the a significant thread in the whole Tea Party movement is the idea that the Tenth Amendment, which reserves to the people all unenumerated rights, etc., has been largely ignored, is a good part of their platform. And that's really a separate debate. What my book was really focusing on is where the concept of a right to privacy has come from, and really whether or not that is still meaningful today, particularly in light of the technology changes that we've seen.
My guest is Frederick Lane. He's the author of American Privacy, the 400-year history of our most contested right. Governments have been pretty oppressive since they arose 4,000 years ago, or however one dates it. And mostly, you just did what the guy at the top told you. And if you didn't, folks with swords or whatever came along and let you know that you were making a mistake.
Fair way to put it.
Okay, here we have this foundation document of our nation. It enumerates our rights, and yet, as you say in your subtitle, all of this and the privacy that emanates from it is contested. Why does this remain a contested area?
Well, it remains a contested area for a whole host of reasons. You've alluded to some of it in the sense that there are things that the government, there are laws that are passed by the government needs to or expects to be obeyed. And in order to ensure that those laws are being obeyed, there are certain amounts of privacy invasions that take place, with respect to even something as simple as a driver's license. Think about the amount of information you need to give up to get that. There are a whole host of other examples. You start getting told Social Security Administration, so on and so forth. And so we trade a certain amount of privacy in exchange for being law-abiding citizens. We exchange a certain amount of privacy for being protected. National security, of course, is a huge privacy invader, as we saw in the middle 2000s when the NSA was listening to AT&T's traffic at various places around the country, which is a huge uproar in the New York Times and actually is the launching point for my book. So we do, as citizens, expect the government to do a certain amount of privacy invasion to make things work the way we expect them to make sure we're safe. The other piece of it, to be honest with you, is that we give up a huge amount of privacy, quote-unquote, or information that some people would consider private, in exchange for very little. That is to say, the convenience of using a easy pass as we go through the toll booth, or exchanging it for a coupon maybe with a courtesy card at Starbucks or at the supermarket. So there's a lot of things that we do as individuals that we don't think about on a moment-by-moment basis that has contributed to this whole privacy issue. And when I say whole privacy issue, what I'm really referring to is the fact that there are huge amounts of electronic information about all of us that are now available mostly to, private industry as part of its advertising efforts, but also increasingly through the actions of the Patriot Act to the government as well.
I was going to ask you, Frederick Lane, about, I was read back a quote you had made in answer to a Q&A that accompanied your book as part of the publicity material, but maybe I ought to ask you that. I don't like asking other people's questions, but it's relevant. I'll give some of it that you've already said, and that's the British Prime Minister John Major in the early 1980s when he was talking about installing these cameras in public spaces. He said, if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to fear. And sometimes even people say that about the phone being tapped or even police coming into your place. So what? A cop comes to your door and say, hey, I need to search your house. And rather than you saying, you got to have a warrant, you would say, hey, why not? Come on in. If you got to, that helps law enforcement. So, but the question that was asked of you, and I want to ask, follow up on this, and you answered very eloquently, is why should we care about privacy? And what do we lose if privacy disappears?
Well, I think that we lose a bunch of different things. My concern with respect to that is twofold. Number one, present-day concerns, and then historical concerns. The present-day concerns really get to our relationship with the government and our ability to have autonomy in what we do. And this is really getting back to what the founders were talking about, that if you have a situation where the Crown, as it did, can issue general warrants and give a portmaster the authority to go into any ship or any home looking for contraband, then you've got a much more subservient relationship to the government. You don't have a great deal of autonomy in terms of who can come onto your property and who cannot. Now, again, if you don't have anything to hide, that may not bother you. But for a lot of people, it's a more existential concern about the fact that they are not being treated as, in a sense, fully adult individuals who are given a certain right over their property and over the space that they control.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, because that actually, you anticipated my question, because you talk about some practical concerns in the political arena. Most people, even in times of revolution, they're spectators, and usually history is made by a minority of the population, except in some different cases. It was certainly true during the American Revolutionary War period. But there is something humiliating about having to submit to bureaucratic authority, and that's usually not considered, you know. Oh, don't be silly, you know. Mm-hmm. But the idea that someone else has the power over you, and in sort of what you said, infantilizing people essentially.
Right.
You're a little kid, and I can search your car, I can search your person, I can search your house. I think that's a big element.
I think it's a huge element, and let's not forget that the underpinning of our judicial system is innocent until proven guilty. And we need to be increasingly aware, I think, of the tremendous investigative power that the government has through increased resources, increased law enforcement personnel, certainly in terms of increased computer technology and resources. The ability to harass people or to make life difficult for someone is, I think, profound. And I think we need to recognize that bureaucrats are human too, and it's possible for them to make mistakes. There are plenty of cases of individuals who can't fly these days because their names are similar to someone who may actually have done something wrong or might do something wrong. And then there are people who are petty and manipulative and what have you, who would misuse this power. And this is where history comes in, because I think that this is a critically important thing to remember. We have very concrete examples in our history of governmental power being misused in these kinds of ways. You can go back to the 40s and 50s with the MacArthur era, the anti-communist campaigns of J. Edgar Hoover, who conducted decades of warrantless wiretaps of individuals throughout the United States. We can look at the fact that we had a president who was impeached in part because of his invasions of privacy, referring specifically to the fact that Richard Nixon was using the United States military to conduct domestic surveillance in the late 1960s and early 1970s, chiefly of Vietnam protesters, but also of other people who were perceived to be a political threat to him. So, as much as one can glibly say, I have nothing to fear, you can't really, I think, ultimately be confident that power to investigate won't be misused unless we've got constitutional standards that are adhered to that make it clear that there needs to be probable cause before someone actually turns your life upside down.
The book is American Privacy, the 400-year history of our most contested right. The author, Frederick S. Lane, is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. And you can go to fredericklane.com. That's FREDERICKLANE.com. Also my website, peterwerby.com. Beacon.org. Beacon is the publisher. It's a lot of great titles there. Well, I could imagine someone, I always do this, imagine a listener thinking, well, Mr. Privacy Guys, because I agree with you, that's all, you know, well and good in the 18th century, but we're talking about terrorism. We're talking about the 21st century. We're talking about the necessity to get the jump on guys that mean us great harm. And so, you know, if you don't want to wind up with another September 11th, maybe we ought to, you know, not have such a demand for this existential angst, if you will, that that I get when you know, when I cross the border and open your trunk, you know, like I feel like saying, well, you know, why? There's nothing in there, you know. And plus, these guys that do that are listening to my show right now, so they're gonna make sure to have
right,
me do that
exactly.
Again.
Well, this is the thing. I don't want anyone listening to this show or anyone reading my book, certainly, to suggest or to come away with the impression that I am anti-national security just because I'm pro-privacy. I actually do think that the two not only can coexist, but really that they have to coexist, because essentially we're fighting a form of totalitarianism, and it would seem to me that the irony would be to turn our government into a totalitarian entity to win that war. And so I don't think anybody really wants to go that far. And I think we do have some legitimate debate over where the boundaries can be drawn. How aggressively should, you know, domestic intelligence be conducted in order to protect us? And I think that where we really come down on this is that we need to make sure that we have the checks and balances that are built into our system to make sure that we can always take a look at this. And a good example of that, I think, Peter, is that if you look at the way the Patriot Act is drafted, one of the things that is particularly disturbing is that the national security letters that can be issued by the government are extraordinarily difficult to challenge. That is to say, in terms of what information is being retrieved by the Federal Bureau of Investigation and other agencies, how do we know how much information is being collected? How do we know to what purposes that is being used? And there are actually provisions of the law where it is illegal to notify people that their information has been requested subject to these national security letters. Now, obviously, it's understandable in the sense that you don't necessarily want to tip off a potential terrorist that, you know, this investigation is taking place. But if we can't in any way, shape, or form bring that before an independent judiciary and have them determine whether or not there have been any abuses, then the simple truth is that abuses will occur. And then you start to get into some real questions about whether or not the fundamental structure that was set up by the Founding Fathers is still in place.
Sure. I wonder, in the era, the modern era of communications, electronic communications, what has really happened to privacy? Certainly, when we, as a nation, learned that during, well, probably from the beginning of the Bureau of Investigation early on in the 20th century through who knows how long, before email became the form of communicating, the idea that private letters that had been sent among people were steamed open, like by the FBI. or local, what they called Red Squad, was just horrendous to all of us. Now, I mean, I'm not doing anything illegal or anything, but I mean, I tell people routinely, anything you write in an email message is public knowledge. There is no privacy on the internet whatsoever, either what sites you're going to or certainly the what you're writing.
Well, I mean, tell it to your former mayor, right?
Absolutely.
I was thinking of Kwame Kilpatrick when we were getting ready for this, because, you know, isn't he, like so many other public figures these days, a textbook example of how there is no privacy with respect to electronic communications?
Yeah.
And, you know, what people need to understand is that, for starters, as a practical matter, every email and every text message goes through multiple servers. And when it goes through multiple servers, it is routinely being copied. Now, whether or not those copies are retained is up to the individual service provider, and that'll vary from case to case. But electronically, it's being downloaded, passed on, and that is a replicative process. So it is not impossible for dozens of copies of a given message to exist, however temporarily. And of course, as was completely clear in Mayor Kilpatrick's case, you know, those copies were being stored for quite some period of time.
Which is unusual for text messaging.
It's a little unusual, though I will tell you that as storage space drops, the cost of storage space drops, the length of time for which material is stored grows exponentially.
Right.
Because what used to drive the copying over of old messages was the fact that tapes and hard drives were so expensive, you couldn't go out and buy more. Now you go down to your local Costco or whatever, and you can buy a terabyte for, what, $150?
Sure.
I mean, it's staggering. So, I think, you know, the thing is that, you know, we ought to give a lot of credit to Ben Franklin, who was postmaster under the British Crown for about 25 years before he became the Continental Congress's postmaster. And he was the one who really drove this idea of postal privacy. Mm-hmm. He saw that as being a fundamental element, really. Again, we're getting back to that concept of citizens as adults, you know, that their communication should be treated as confidential, and the government had no business reading those, unless it had a very good reason for doing so that it could use to persuade a judge to allow the government to open those letters. we never really grappled with that issue of confidentiality when we created electronic communications. And Congress has been totally derelict in addressing these issues. They are so far behind, it's staggering. But unfortunately, email and text messages never got the same legal protection that mail did.
Yeah, I think maybe just as a parenthesis, and then we ought to get back to how you talk about what we should do, where we should go from here in your book, American Privacy. You delete your email, all gone, right?
That unfortunately is one of the great fantasies of the 21st century, because without getting into too much detail, I do computer forensics as a sort of full-time thing, and computer forensics exists because when you delete files on your computer, you're simply deleting the file name. You're not actually deleting the content. To actually delete the content in a thorough way takes a lot more effort. And that's only good for a file that you've created on your computer that you have complete control over. If you've emailed that file to anyone or you've put it on a flash drive or whatever, all of a sudden now it's that much more difficult to actually delete the content. And there are lots of people in jail for precisely that reason.
Well, there's, as we said, and is there in the subtitle of your book, The 400-Year History of Our Most Contested Right, and there's been, since these amendments to the Constitution were written, constant infringements. What do we do? What would be a way to assure that we have privacy, the privacy we deserve?
Well, I think the two or three most important things. First of all, personal responsibility is the most important thing. I think we need to be much more conscious of how we use technology and what we're using technology for and who we're delivering that information to. Again, Mayor Kilpatrick is a perfect example. Don't text something to someone that you don't want to show up in,
the Free Press.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The second thing is that we should have a much more aggressive Congress in terms of dealing with these kinds of privacy issues. A good example is that the European Union favors a system called opt-in, which basically says that in order for a company and to some degree governments to collect information or redistribute it, they need to get specific permission from individuals to collect it, and then each time it's being passed on to some other organization, they need specific permission saying, this is how we're going to use your information. That would make a huge difference. In the United States, it tends to be opt-out, which means that the assumption is that unless you tell the corporation that you don't want your information being used, they tend to do so. And that we could have much, much better privacy standards altogether. That leads really to my third idea, which is that much in the same way that we have an Environmental Protection Agency or a Federal Communications Commission or a Food and Drug Administration, we really should consider putting together a federal privacy protection agency that could have a staff of well-trained privacy experts who could help establish standards for government and corporate and, to some degree, individual privacy behavior.
Well, let me stop you there because, unfortunately, we are completely out of time. But this is an extraordinary book. If you value your privacy, you're not going to get a note in the mail from the government. We've decided to end all this. A lot of it is, it's death of a thousand cuts. So the first step is to be informed about the threat to it. The book is American Privacy, The 400-Year History of Our Most Contested Right. Frederick Lane is the author. He's been my guest. You can go to Frederick Lane. That's FREDERICKLANE.com. The book is published by Beacon, so you can go to beacon.org or one more, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Fred Lane, thanks for being on my show.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
It all starts with having a good pre-screened group of contractors to choose from. And Hire It Done is your one-stop guide to finding the one that's right for your home improvement project. Hi, I'm Adam Helfman, host of WRIF's Hire It Done. Before you start your day's home improvement tasks around your house, grab a cup of hot coffee and tune us in Saturday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Join us this weekend. Bed bugs are the fastest growing nuisance pest in the world. These little hitchhikers travel well from place to place on people, luggage, furniture, pets, you name it. Once in your home, they're difficult to eliminate. We'll give you tips on how to put these little guys to rest. Spring is about to, well, spring. We'll help you get your home improvement projects off on the right foot. Hire It Done's money-saving tip of the week. Plus, I'll take your house calls live all this Saturday beginning at 7 a.m. on Hire It Done at 101 WRIF, The Riff.
Do you want a wireless laptop but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronics Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronics is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-493-8159. Now you have qualified help in dealing with the IRS. This is the second chance you never had before to save up to 85%.